Hey, you got to be a model, this or that. I mean, haven't you got a mind of your own?
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hey everybody, welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the fourth greatest movie podcast where society forces us to watch a weird genre of films and they pick the movies as well. And here we are. My name is Roy. I've been married to my wife for 24 years, but I just found out that she's a bloody rocker and I'm a mod, and now we have to have a street fight.
In the United States, when a white man child reaches 45 years old, he is sent inside to podcast. The Aborigines call this the talkabout. Hi, I'm John, and for the next 2 to 5 hours, join me on my talkabout.
5 hours sounds like it's a joke. It's probably not, so.
Hi there, I'm Mickey, and I have a morbid fear of depths.
And I am Phil, and the naughtiest thing I've ever done on Brighton Beach was drop litter, except I didn't actually even do that because I'm too much of a good boy.
Well, awesome. Welcome, you guys. So, Mickey and Phil, so happy to have you. We've had Phil a couple times on our Star Trek podcast as well as this podcast. Can you remember the movies we watched, John? Was it The Quiet Earth?
We watched Quiet Earth. We watched At World's End.
That's right.
And, gosh, you put me on the spot. I sure did. It's like Phil's other favorite movie of all time was...
Scooby-Doo. The very controversial Four Lions.
The Four Lions. That's right.
That was the controversy. Yeah.
That was a good podcast. Those are great movies. Mm-hmm. We've long heard tell of Mickey and it turns out she's real, not just a fantasy that Phil has made up. And she's here with us, and she's brought some stunning films. And I think we explored this last time when they came on and introduced the movies, that she's from Australia, and I have so many Australia questions, and by so many I mean I have one, but it's a really weird one, and we'll get there. We've got Walkabout, which I guess is an Australian film. We've got Quadrophenia, which is also an Australian film, and we have The Abyss, which is an Australian film.
I sense a theme.
Yeah. I assume so here in the United States, we have a lot of cities named after British cities. Like John and I, our favorite ski resort is Brighton, right? So there. So I assume that when we're talking about Brighton and Quadrophenia, it's just another Brighton in Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, and we can discuss that.
Around here.
Well, they take a train to Australia, right? Like, they live in London or somewhere.
And then take a train to Australia.
They take a train to Australia, to the Brighton Beach of Australia.
I think so.
Victoria, yeah.
I'm very confused.
You know, I just realized, wait, have we talked about this? We ski at a ski resort called Brighton.
Yeah.
And is it like a sarcastically named ski resort because the famous Brighton is a beach and a beach is the opposite of a mountain that you ski on?
Sand,
you may be overthinking this.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, the point is we're really happy to have you. So, Mickey and Phil, welcome. And we're going to have some good time.
Thank you.
Anyway, we should just catch up quickly. You guys live much closer to the stupidest war ever. So how are you guys doing? I understand the UK is just bristling with Ukrainian refugees who've been allowed to enter.
We've rolled out the red carpet.
Yeah,
for all 40 of them.
it's almost as if we've spent the last 2 decades demonizing anybody seeking asylum or refuge, and now that the people doing it are not black or brown, we've become very confused, and we want to let them in, but our political machinery is set up so much to stop that happening that we don't quite know how to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Oh man, that's funny. So everyone here in the United States is complaining about the price of gas. I think around here it's $4.50, but the last time I was in Europe, it's like that much for a liter, and that was several years
ago. I heard someone say the dollar price now is $11.
Oh man, not where I live. It's about $4.50 for a gallon.
Yeah.
So it might be $11.
Are you talking about over there?
They're doing it reversed.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't be liter. Yeah. It would be. It should be less than that. Then
it's per liter. We've always had much more expensive petrol for some reason.
Yeah, I've never quite understood that.
It's just taxed a lot more.
I mean, yeah, we all import I don't know how it works. Boy, how did we start talking about this? I don't know how well, it works.
If you've seen, so I've only been over to Europe a couple times, and I spent a couple weeks in London. Before I knew you, Phil, or I would have come and said hi.
I meant to that one time. I still feel really bad.
John knew you while he was in London.
I took the day off work and everything.
I should have done things differently. I like tried to plan things and then things fell through, and I still feel bad about that. I want you to know.
One thing I noticed is the roads in a lot of those European countries are well maintained, and here in the United States, not so much. And so maybe that's the difference in gas prices.
Maybe, but that's one of the things Brits love to complain. That's one of the things we love to complain about the most is potholes in the road.
Especially in our neck of the woods. The roads are terrible.
Isn't this fascinating? An insight into different cultures. Well, let's just hope that none of the films today raise the worrying specter of Russia and nuclear weapons.
Well, I think Walkabout is all about that, right? But we'll get it. So my brother, I think you know, Phil, that John and I are LDS, and we both served missions. John went to New Zealand, which is all sorts of fun, and I went to Brazil. But my youngest brother went to the Ukraine, and so he has a family that was able to get out of the Ukraine and is now at his home in Utah. So it's kind of personal for my brother. And my brother's putting together a benefit concert in Utah. And I don't know how my brother, who doesn't know anyone, did this, but he managed to get the neon trees, which they're pretty darn good. But anyway, that's all I have.
That's a nice broad sweep of cultures and countries, isn't it? Brazil, New Zealand, and Ukraine.
Yeah.
Interesting.
My brother went to Idaho, just so you know. Yeah. So sometimes that happens.
I have a son right now who's in Mexico, so all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah, hooray. Anyway, have you guys seen any good movies lately? Because we usually talk about that a little bit. Have you finally seen The Batman, John?
No, I haven't seen Neither Batman. Have I. I'm enticed from what Andy mentioned to us, you know, when we were talking on his podcast. He said if you're concerned about Batman punching too many people, then this might be the movie for you. And I'm like, okay. So I do want to see it. But if I go out to see a movie, I'd want to probably see an Oscar movie because, you know, the Oscars are a big deal in my household. And I want to make sure I see the other – I think I still have like six more Best Picture Oscars to go, so I haven't seen The Batman. So, did anybody else see The Batman? Are we going to talk about The Batman, or did no one see it?
We haven't seen it. We have a friend who's a Batman obsessive, and he's the only person whose opinion I'm interested in.
Okay.
Just because I don't really like Batman films, but he really... Well, he's one of those people who loves Batman, but despises all Batman things.
All the Batman films.
I mean, like every Batman film, like all 50 Batman films, there wasn't one thing in 50 Batman movies that you could appreciate.
I haven't seen many. I saw the 1989 first, the Michael Keaton one. Uh-huh. And I think that might be the only one I've seen, you know.
Well, you're really cheating yourself because 1967's Batman the movie is as good as it gets. If you're into movies about helicopters crashing onto pillow factories, that's your film.
Shark.
Well, if you're going to crash somewhere.
Yeah. I think that might have been the one.
Was it the My Pillow Factory?
One can only hope. Oh, it's the weirdest thing. At work, sometimes I can listen to the news and I choose to listen to CNN. And there was a My Pillow commercial on CNN, and like the dissonance was so jarring. I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, that's strange.
Yeah, I thought that I'd accidentally switched to the OAN network or one of those weird. Anyway, I immediately bought myself five of My Pillows. But beside the point.
No, the only film we've seen at the cinema lately was Dune. That was the first time we'd gone back post pandemic in inverted commas. We hadn't been before then. We haven't been since, really. But we'll probably go more now.
Don't Look Up on Netflix.
Was that good?
You saw it?
Yes, very good.
Is that?
And we both saw The Green Knight.
Ooh, I love The Green Knight.
I love The Green Knight. Yeah.
Mickey didn't see it. I saw it.
So I was less enthused on Don't Look Up myself.
So John and I, we did an end of year podcast, and did we both agree Green Knight was the best new movie of the year last year?
I think we did.
Yeah, that was really good.
But just pedaling back slightly, there was a running joke in Don't Look Up that delighted me every single time. So I just want to also mention that.
Oh, thank you. I am halfway through the movie Pig right now, which is fascinating as far as Nicolas Cage movies go. But so it's weird because this time last year, I had watched almost every single Best Picture nominee, and I think right now I haven't seen a single one.
You've seen Dune.
I've seen Dune. Oh, that's right. Hey, Dune is getting a second part, obviously, but that's a two-part movie, which we're going to talk about later.
Are we?
We are, okay. Randomly. Okay. So anyway.
I will say I did see Coda, which was I wouldn't consider it, like, I'm surprised it was nominated for Best Picture, but it was more delightful than just about any other movie I've seen. So I'm like, oh, I can kind of appreciate that. It was a little bit more family oriented rather than, you know, I don't know, worldwide tragedy oriented or historically oriented. But, you know, it's about a girl who's the only speaking member of her family, and the rest of them are deaf, and she wants to sing, and it has the kid from Sing Street in it. And so I really liked it a lot. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, are we ready to talk about these movies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Big silent gap. It. So I want to ask Mickey, how old were you when you left Australia?
When I left Australia, I was 16.
So you had already done your walkabout?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, I'll sum this up pretty quick. There's not an intricate plot here. So this is going to go pretty fast. White boy and white girl, as they are known in the credits, are having a picnic with their dad in his Volkswagen Beetle in the outback, and they get out of the car to have a little fun, and the father, because he hates his children, tries to shoot them with a gun, and then because he's so mad at himself for being such a poor shot, he kills himself. And white girl, instead of trying to drive the car back to town, which wouldn't have worked, I think the gas tank was empty, but white girl, instead of like following the car tracks back to a road, walks straight into the outback. Like, you can't more directly walk away from civilization into the outback than she did. That's what she did. So her and her brother, they're walking along. At some point, they find a bit of an oasis, and they drink that muddy water, and they play in that water, and then that water goes away. And thankfully, they are found by, I'm telling you, in the credits, his name is Black Boy. The Aboriginal finds him, and they can't really communicate, but he kind of helps them out. So they follow him. There's a great moment that I will get to in the awards, I think. Yeah, exactly. There's such a wonderful moment there. But anyway, White Boy learns – I wish there were better names here, okay? The kid learns the Aborigines language somehow, right? Like within a couple hours, they're sort of speaking. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he picked it up, but he did.
I know you're still summing up, but – I had a hard time telling what was real and what was surreal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like the water went away from their little oasis in 24 hours. I don't know if oases usually do that.
Do they do that? I guess it's Mickey, not enough.
I don't know.
In your walkabout, was that something?
Yes, okay. That does happen.
That does happen. Okay.
We believe this may have been a billabong.
Yes.
Oh. I thought billabong was just a shirt. Okay, well, there we go. It's a billabong.
Is that what it is? Is that where water sprouts up and then recedes into the ground?
Yeah.
But that's right. Okay. He teaches them to, like, shove a straw into the ground, and you can still drink that delicious water. One of the many things he teaches them. Mm. He also does he teach them to love? In the end, I think he tries. It doesn't work out very well.
No.
Again, not a whole lot of plot, but they do for the next hour and 10 minutes swim in a big pool. There's about a full hour of naked swimming, which is the best. Just kids, you know, cooling off and enjoying being clean again. And then I don't know how this fits into the plot, but there's a couple of scientists with weather balloons, and they're all really there just to ogle the female scientist every time she crosses her legs or adjusts her collar. I guess the kids find one of their balloons later on. And then the weirder part is there's a guy who has a bunch of aboriginals that make pottery for him, and he's kind of their sweatshop owner, and we see that scene and we don't see it again. So maybe I missed something, but there it was. We finally get to a house that looks like it's been abandoned for some time. What we didn't know was that the aboriginal kid who's doing his walkabout, this is the love nest that he's prepared. And so the girl is in there, and he comes and he does the traditional dance that she understands what's going on, right? Because she later tells her brother that I think he wanted to say goodbye. That was his way of saying goodbye. but I would say that his body was saying otherwise. So then my understanding now, because it's like a mating dance, but she doesn't go for it. And then the next morning he hangs himself, sort of. It's like a kind of like a crucifixion, but it's just like he's put himself in the T position on gymnastics rings in a tree. So I guess that kills you. And the point that I take away from that is, on your walkabout, doesn't matter what else happens at the end of it, you'd better have sex or don't come back. And so, Mickey, is that true?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Definitely.
I'm glad you made it back. No judgments. So. So welcome back. So it ends by them finding a mining factory, and the guy, instead of enslaving them and turning them into mine workers, I don't know, they end up being saved because we see the girl a couple years later, and I guess this whole movie's either been a dream or a flashback or something, or just remembering her fond memories of her walkabout. And that's Walkabout.
I have several questions based on what you said.
Okay.
First of all, okay, everybody answer. I'm going to ask several questions here. Did the kid kill himself? Was it a hanging? How did he kill himself?
Well,
yes.
What was...
See above.
How's it a hanging? Okay, because there was nothing around his neck, right? I don't understand how he died.
I don't remember getting a clear shot of that. I just took it as being a hanging.
It looks like he fell down from the sky, toes first, and his armpits, you know, landed on branches.
Oh, like in First Blood when he jumps off the cliff and his arm lands on a branch.
I thought this was a remake of First Blood.
This was a remake of First Blood. Okay. Got it.
But, okay, and then I'm not... Also, I mean, I kind of thought it was some kind of mating ritual thing, but I wasn't sure about that. So I wasn't sure why the death happened. And I think the boy and the girl liked each other. I mean, she was checking him out before he was checking her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, lots of zoom, like, you know, all she wants to do is zoom and zoom, 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 baby, boom, boom, right? Shake his rump.
Yeah. So. She wanted that. So I didn't really think of it as like this some kind of sexual denial thing. The only way I could make sense of it, because I think the movie does a really good job pointing this out. Like, first of all, like, the big question of the movie is who's really civilized here, kind of thing, right? Isn't that the big question? And then also, I feel like his death was the result of just no one's at fault so much, but it's just the supreme clash of the cultures.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say from exhaustion, because he had to maintain. He had to maintain readiness for hours during his dance.
He kept dancing.
I'm
going to wear it down.
The beginning of his dance, he gave the international symbol for "I want to motorboat," which is immediately recognizable.
I love your coded language for it. What did you call it? His state of readiness?
Constant readiness for hours, yes.
Maybe he lost blood supply to his brain for a long period. That's what killed him.
Okay. Yeah, we're dancing a little closer to it. I just wanted to make sure we're talking about the same thing. Because I wasn't totally sure if that was the situation that was happening or if part of his costume was just flapping up.
He had his seat back in the upright position for the duration of the dance, which was supposed to be hours, right?
I don't know.
He was just being incredibly emo. you know, that was his response to being rejected by her.
We know you're a 16-year-old, mate.
But really?
Love is hard, but what we're saying is we agree that that was kind of the weakest part of the film.
It didn't feel right. I can't imagine that...
he'd be confused and upset, but that he'd go straight to...
No.
To suicide seemed a bit odd to us.
So he's like a Gen X Aboriginal then, right? I guess, or whatever.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not clear on the gens.
I don't either. As soon as I said it, I knew I was wrong, but that's fine. So one thing this movie did really well was give us close-ups of insects.
Yes.
There were a lot, and I assume every time we got a close-up of an insect or a lizard, that insect or lizard bit one of the people in our movie. There was a part where she asked him if this was Australia. What's she talking about?
Yeah, that was yes, a bit that weird was as well. Weird as well.
Did she forget whether or not she'd been on a boat and crossed like the ocean? I don't know what. So that part was weird, and I was going to ask Mickey: is it possible to leave Australia and not leave the outback? Is there like a portion of the outback that is not Australia?
No. But maybe it's like a sort of symbolic question to say that this is your. It's almost a different land because the cultures are so different.
Oh, wow.
You're saying, well, you guys... Is this Australia? Is there two Australias? Is there one Australia that has two bits? Or is Australia a white construct or what have you?
I like that.
Yeah. Very good. That's very good.
If she were originally American, you know, because in the story she's like a Brit who...
Yeah.
Like the family is like British and they live in Australia, right? But if this were an American girl... she could theoretically, you know, talk to an Aboriginal boy and say, is this Australia in the same sense, like kind of making an assumption that, you know, there are lands set aside that aren't necessarily part of like the normal
state. Yeah. Lands, yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what it was getting at, either literally or metaphorically.
I choose option B. Yeah. Very good insight. And so the next question I have is, are there camels in Australia?
Yes, there are camels. There is a feral population that has been bred from, I think, 19th century.
Feral camels.
They were brought over.
That sounds terrifying.
Mm-hmm. There was an overpopulation problem, and they were actually culled because they were doing damage to the outback.
Can you imagine like sleeping in a tent in the outback and your tent is attacked by 7 feral camels that just... That'd be something. Okay, so let's see, more questions. Okay, I think maybe the naughtiest scene in this whole movie was when we got the close-up of all that the tree had, like, several different crotches that that we had close-ups.
Yes.
So I guess I have no comment. I just wanted to mention that the trees have crotches, apparently. So
tree crotches. What's up with that?
Yeah, I'll talk to you about crotches later. Yeah.
Hey, John Crotchy.
I don't know if it's the done thing to ask such a blunt question, but Roy, did you like it? I'm trying to work out.
No, yes, I did. I did.
Okay.
And honestly,
I have to say I loved it.
Because I've ranked these three films, and it's going to change, and I have no idea. Like, I feel like I just... flipped a quarter because I don't know where
to... Don't let stress worry you two. He does this every time.
I don't know where to put these stupid movies. Not, they're not stupid. They're lovely. I really enjoyed all of them, and they're so different. These movies couldn't be more different from each other.
Boy, are they different. Yeah.
Yeah.
We
should give it an end-of-the-year award to the person who comes up with the three most different movies that compose their personality.
Yeah.
I said that today as we were watching The Abyss. We watched today as the last one that you picked incredibly different movies.
Thank you.
But I have so much to say about Walkabout.
Let's hear it.
First of all, that the young actor, the white boy, I think it's an incredible performance.
The little boy.
He's so young. Like, I can't imagine he learnt lines. They must have just told him vaguely what to do and let him get on with it.
I think I read that that's the director's son.
It is, yeah.
Oh,
I just think it's extraordinary performance for someone so young. I mean, Mickey's a pediatrician, so how old would you say he was at the
time?
Maybe
6 or 7.
25. Oh,
six or seven. That is young to be in a film in those conditions, all on location. I think that's an extraordinary performance from him.
Doesn't it feel like they're just filming him being a boy?
Yeah.
I mean, how much direction was he given? Maybe they're just filming him... I mean, obviously you have to give some direction because there is sort of a plot to this film. But no, he does do an extraordinary job, and especially because in America and in Hollywood, child actors are the bane of my existence. They're almost always universally so the worst. Yeah,
mm-hmm. You say he's being a boy, Roy, and that's interesting because one of the things I really took away from it was that it's one of the things it's looking at is masculinity. Mm. You know, we've got the white collar dad who's been driven mad by business failures or whatever's gone on there. To, you know, homicidal and suicidal lengths. And you've got the very playful boy. He's innocent, but he plays with guns and you're dead, you're dead, all that. So he's kind of on the edge of, you know, the feral perhaps and the innocent. And then you've got the much more
prim and proper.
Prim and proper. I'm talking about the other boy.
Oh, sorry.
The boy is, sorry. He's 16, but he's much more of a manly man than the white dad would ever be, in the sense that he's, you know, actually capable of living out in the wilds, eating stuff that would make a billy goat puke.
Thank you for that.
So I think it's just I was fascinated by, and I don't think it's like a main theme of the film or anything, but just these little glimpses of different kinds of manhood, if you'll pardon the expression. Okay, I'm just going to get this out, and then my big roundabout walkabout is done. Like, obviously, the clash of civilizations, what is truly civilized, is a big theme. And I think I saw a bit of the Roger Ebert review where he said it's that, but it's also about communication. And yeah, I can see that as well. What I took away from it was it's all about entropy, right? It's all about decay, but also a bit of rebirth. Because, like, there's a scene where there's a little lizard that's being devoured by a big lizard. It's like half in its mouth. And then in turn, the Aboriginal boy comes along and kills the big lizard. And it's like it's sort of circle of life thing. One minute you're the predator, the next you're the prey. We're all just part of this chain. And everywhere you look, there's decay. So, you know, they turn up to the farmhouse where no one is left. The previous owners are buried in the yard, sort of becoming one with the earth again and feeding the worms and all that. And she looks at those photos of them and thinks, that's gone now. You know, those people, those lives, those young faces, they're all gone. They don't exist anymore. And she seems to be quite affected by that. Then at the end, the mine, they get to the mine, and that's, she says, where's everybody gone? And the mine guy says, well, they emptied the mine and then there was nothing left and everybody went. So it's just kind of this aspect of everything is finite, everything gets used up, everything decays, we're just kind of, everything we do contributes to the heat death of the universe, ultimately. Everything we do just wears the world out. And I think ultimately what it's saying is that's unavoidable. Everyone's going to die, everyone's going to return to the earth, every mine is going to be emptied in the end, it's not going to be refilled. So given that is the inevitability of life, is death and decay, but also with a bit of rebirth, then you might as well just do it in harmony with nature and just kind of enjoy life and relax, because you can't go back again.
You
is the other big theme.
Back. Yeah, that's,
you know, everything
the big thing
is finite. You're never going to be able to go back, so you might as well just live in the moment and accept that you can't go back, you can't retrieve the past, you can't refill the mine.
Dang. Very excellent. Excellent treatise, Phil. Okay, Mickey, I gotta know what you think of this movie, and I gotta know, there must be some story behind this movie, and how you kind of define it is like one of yours.
I think it's just, even though it's not an Australian film, it's so Australian. There's, you know, the scenery, the animals. The
scenery is amazing.
Yeah.
So it was in
shot,
Australia?
It's fantastic.
The girl's right. It's not Australia.
Well, it's in Australia.
It is. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's a British
Australia.
Director.
Yeah,
she's British.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
British director. Okay.
So technically, it is a British film, okay. But you know, I think the fact that it's just so Australian makes it an Australian film. And the, you know, the lifestyle, the scenes in the city. And, you know, the swimming after school, the eating salad for dinner, the playing in the sprinklers. That's something, sorry, those big sprinklers at the end near the mining village. We used to play in those sprinklers exactly like that as kids. It just feels so Australian, and also obviously the Indigenous Australian who recently died, sadly, who was the first Aboriginal actor, really, who gained popularity, and also he was the first Aboriginal man who, or boy at the time, who was shown to be sexualized, to have, to be sexually attractive, which was, you know, obviously a massive thing at the time.
This is the same, sorry, you know, forgive me because this is a silly thing, but he's the same Aboriginal guy in Crocodile Dundee, isn't he?
Yes.
And The Right Stuff.
Yes, he is.
He's not The Right Stuff.
He is in The Right Stuff.
Where was the? I just don't recall.
There's a part in The Right Stuff where there's like a. It's probably near Alice Springs, right? Where there's like a radar station or something. I don't know what part of The Right Stuff there is, but
are you thinking of the ditch?
Yeah, I guess so. But I just know there's a portion of The Right Stuff where there's Aboriginals looking at the stars in Australia, and he's there.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. I guess there's nothing more human than sexuality, huh? and so, I mean,
nothing wrong with
like
being
we
sexy.
Do have to we have to make that step, right? It's like, oh, okay, yeah. No, I think that is interesting. Just really quick, just thinking about it a little bit. Like for me, by the way, I'm still not convinced that it was sex that what was happening in the last scene, because I'm still so confused by it, but I kind of love my confusion in a way.
John, you'll understand someday.
I think this movie is like what Phil said, it's about decay. I also feel like it's just really, really critical. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like it's very like white liberal kind of like, okay, we're going to be critical of ourselves a little bit, but I think it is a lot like that. And I think it's done in a very kind of interesting way, and not like a way like, you know, all you white people who are watching this kind of suck, you know, and it's not so much like that. I think it's just, I just find it interesting that at the very beginning of the movie, they intercut like the didgeridoo music with, you know, people in the city, in Adelaide, I guess, right? Like going to work, doing these things, doing their little rituals. It's intercut with like the rituals of another culture, and it's kind of showing sort of the
preparation of food.
The food preparation. It's like the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of thing. So it's like we all have, you know, those same rituals, and you know, and we kind of think of ourselves living in cities that we're not, you know, into this savagery, but there is savagery, like the most explicit savagery that happens is at the beginning of the movie. And like what, you know, the civilization that we built that we think is making us safe is actually making us really anxious and wanting to kill our children. Mm. You know, it's like that's the result of the civilization that we've made. And then you cut to the very end of the movie, like the second to last part of the movie, and the Aboriginal boy, I kind of felt like he was like his whole dance was actually his death dance, not his sex dance. Because you talk about decay, and I felt like he was like he made himself up to be a skeleton. Like, so he was like preparing for, you know, like that kind of afterlife. And then at the very, very end, you know, when she's all back in the comfort of society, she's yearning for, you know, this thing that, you know, where she was out in the open and she wasn't confined in.
So
I think you're onto something there, John, because he's very interested in the girl, or we get the feeling he's interested in the girl, but then he has the bit where he sees the hunters.
Yeah.
You know, brutally, not in his kind of down to earth circle of life way, just blow the hell out of the animals. And then he goes back to the house, and then he just walks straight past her. because he's upset. And so he's kind of, whereas before he's been courting her or looking at her in that kind of way, he just walks past at that time. And then he goes to lie in a pit of bones and just kind of considers life. And then he comes back and does his dance as a skeleton. So I can see what you're saying, that there's...
Yeah.
And that's just kind of shaken his worldview. He's seen such barbarity.
So, yeah.
He's so very focused on her, though. His dance is all about...
That's true, yeah.
You know, watching her and seeing her and
saying goodbye.
It's interesting. It may be that when he started his walkabout, like that you have your choice of this is a walkabout to discover who you are and then you come back and you're a man, or this is a walkabout where at the end, then, you know, you have to reject a girl and die. Maybe he chose the wrong one. I don't know. But Phil, I love what you said. And it also kind of maybe coming back from watching that hunt, maybe he felt like he had not civilized himself in front of her or whatever, but maybe he was reminding her that he's wild, right? That he's not like her, right? So anyway.
I thought maybe he was like, hey, look, I'm bumping up against this other culture and I do like you and I want you to be like me. I don't want to be like you. And so that's kind of what split.
Yeah, he's offering her a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not just of him sexually, but this sort of lifestyle.
Instead,
you want to come and live my better, simple life, and she decides not to.
Instead, she ends up back in the city with some guy whose name is probably Blaine or something.
Yeah,
he did look like a Blaine. Yeah,
or Bill, because it's Australia.
Oh yeah, everyone's called Bill in Australia.
Everyone's Bill
or Wayne.
So how well known is this film in Australia?
I don't know exactly, but I would say very.
Okay. I'm trying to think of like what an American equivalent of this film would be that like all Americans just know, and I'm not Star Wars and not Star Wars. Maybe Easy Rider. I don't know.
I wonder if you could do an American version with indigenous people, but could you do that? Or would it just be too fraught with...
I hesitated to bring this up because I feel like I'm just romanticizing how neat it would be to see Native Americans in their habitat, right, for my own pleasure, right? But I feel like oh man, the people who colonized the United States are just the worst ever, and as far as how we treated the Native population. And so I feel like there was this huge missed opportunity for us to have a civilization that grew to this point today that would still be like Australia, where the native population can still do their thing, right? Or some South American countries where you still have tribes that live independently. And that's completely gone. There's nothing even remotely like that. And it's awful. So no, you could not do something like this in the United States in a modern movie. And if you were lucky enough to find a Native American tribe, like stumble upon them after your father tried to kill you and your brother, they're probably going to try to turn into werewolves because it's an American movie. So,
yes. Well, yeah, we're going to get back onto that with the differing styles of movies and the differing nationalities behind them that we've chosen. But one of the things I love about it is that we're having this conversation, and I noticed this with this film and to an extent Quadrophenia, which interestingly are the two older films, where there's much more room for interpretation. You don't get exposition speeches. You don't get big, long, flowery discussions, particularly like at the start, that when the dad starts taking shots at them, the girl, she's almost not surprised or upset. She just gets her brother away. And then just seemed to get on with it. And that set me off thinking, was she suspecting he was going to do this? And there were some, you know, shots of her right at the start with the dad that were a bit lusty in their camera angle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Has there been some abuse there? Is that what's going on? But it's not touched upon. I think this film just really just lets you, just puts it out in front of you, lets the characters do stuff, and then you just take what you want from it. There's never a moment. I think it was a modern film or an American film, but certainly a modern film, they'd feel the need to put in some, like the girl would have to have some imaginary person in her head or something that she could talk to say, oh, yeah, I'm upset about my dad, but like he wasn't really my dad, but I loved him, but it was difficult, and now I'm feeling this. There's none of that. Mm. They just sort of get on with it and do their stuff, and you're just free to then take from it what you see fit.
Or like a long explanation about why the dad decided to do that. Or
right, that's not the story yeah, they're telling. We'll have that, and then we'll tell our own story. And
yeah.
Oh, so I hate the trend in American movies, especially like when they have to do prequels or sequels, where we just have to explore the death out of people's backstories. And I just usually don't care.
Yeah. So. We don't even get names in this film.
So did you guys happen to watch the extra homework we assigned? You didn't have to, but I'm just wondering if you did.
No. I did. I wouldn't say it's related.
It's related
at all. It's not really at all. Okay. It's beautiful. I love it. I love it a lot.
So I don't know if you guys have Documentary Now on Netflix in the UK. I hope you do. It's so wonderful.
Do you guys know Documentary Now?
No.
No.
Okay, so it's Phil Armisen and Bill Hader, who I think were both on Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that name rings a bell, yeah.
So, they're both comedians, but they both love music, and I guess they spoof documentaries, but you get a feel that they really love the documentaries that they're kind of spoofing. And so
famous documentaries.
Mm-hmm. Famous documentaries. And so this one is supposed to be a spoof on the Eagles, but there's an element of it that, okay, you have these two band members that did like this California rock band, and they were really popular for one album, and then they split up, and that was it. And that's the premise of this mockumentary. But one of the two singers, his deal is that he sings in a high falsetto where it doesn't sound like a falsetto. It sounds like a Karen Carpenter. And it's explained multiple times in the movie that he just sounds like a mature woman, right? And then like every time he sings, I just laugh like crazy. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because from Australia comes the band Air Supply. And I need an explanation, because every time I hear a couple of their songs, I got to go check and make sure they're both guys. They are, they're both guys, but one of the two guys, and I don't know their names, but one of the two guys sounds like a woman. Like, it's not even like a falsetto, man. It just sounds like a woman. And so I don't understand what's going on. And sometimes I can't tell if they're singing, if they're both singing, because they sing the song, every Air Supply song is in two parts. And so are they both singing to the same woman? Are they singing to different women? Are they singing to each other, which I'm also just fine with, but I don't understand Air Supply at all. And they're Australian, so Mickey, please explain.
I mean, the name rings a bell, but
the only one I know is I'm All Out of Love.
All Out of Love.
That's the only song. I did not know they were an Australian band. I assumed they were like a Chicago band. Air Supply seems really American to me.
They do seem really American. You can't tell me that in the middle of All Out of Love, you're like, who's that lovely girl singing the other part of the song? I've
never thought about it.
It is such a unique voice. So anyway.
Well, on that note, and taking things back to Mickey and all things Australian and musical, she was once in a music video for an Australian band.
For Air Supply?
In the 80s.
Ooh. Ice House? In Excess?
No.
Please be Ice House.
No.
Oh.
No. They were a band called Bear Garden.
Bear Garden.
You quite like them, actually, I think.
I think they're a bit B-E-A-R, yeah.
Okay.
And the song you were in was called...
I Write the News.
That's right.
Okay.
That's awesome.
How old? Look that up.
I think I was about 11. It was, actually, I was about to give my age away then. I was 11.
Did you play the part of White Girl?
no, but we were in 19th century outfits.
Oh, you got to live out of bonnet fantasy.
35 degree heat.
That's. The hot 35
the
degrees,
hot 35,
right?
Not the freezing 35.
Oh, sorry, 35 degrees Celsius, with like thick tights and many petticoats. I remember that a lot.
That's 95 to you.
Okay, 1995?
No, 95 Fahrenheit.
95 Fahrenheit. Okay.
95.
I was about
Fahrenheit.
To do math and out Mickey's age, but that's fine. So
yes, it was 1995. That's correct.
Okay, 1995. Bear Garden. That's, looking that up.
Okay.
I'm so, writing that down. It's 95.
There is a link to In Excess. Do you know the film Dogs in Space?
I don't.
No.
Dogs in Space. No.
Sounds terrible.
I would recommend it. It is a film where Michael Hutchence plays.
He's going in Excess.
I think. Does he play the lead character? This is testing my knowledge now.
Does he?
But the lead singer of Bear Garden was played by Michael Hutchence.
Okay. Oh. So Bear Garden appears in Dogs in Space, but acted by Michael Hutchence of In Excess.
Yes.
Because the real lead singer Bear Garden is not attractive enough to play himself?
I think this was later. And if you watch the film, you probably understand why.
We'll get to the bottom of this. I always thought Michael Hutchence, I didn't know he was in a movie. I remember when the Doors movie came out with Val Kilmer, I'm like, why didn't they get Michael Hutchence to play Jim Morrison? That would have been great, I thought. But you know.
I miss In Excess. It's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from a quick look at the Wikipedia entry, it seems that it's about a group of musicians who have drugs problems. So, you know.
What an odd story.
Musicians doing drugs? Their mind should be clear for performance.
I'm grateful we're not going to talk about drugs on this podcast.
Oh.
Hey, so just my own little sob story. I had a couple friends who wanted to go see In Excess in concert, and I turned them down because I said, well, I'll just see them next time around. And then Michael Hutchence died. Also, I missed an REM concert because of my high school's graduation, but John went, and John didn't care about graduation.
No, they changed the date of our graduation.
But
so
after
we could
you bought
go.
The tickets.
After we bought the tickets. So you didn't buy the tickets, but then
no,
because
I cared
date.
About graduation.
I didn't. I didn't really. I was like, whatever. I don't need to do the graduation thing. They'll still say I graduated.
Probably.
I mean, that's the way it works, as far as I know.
All right.
Yeah, that was pretty much the best concert I've ever been to. Life changing.
I did a similar thing with Linkin Park.
Linkin Park.
I never imagined that I would never be able to see them live.
Oh.
Again.
Oh,
they're not a band because that guy died, right? Too.
And John missed a White Stripes concert because Meg died, except just metaphorically, not physically.
I did, yeah. So I never saw White Stripes. No.
And Roy missed one because he went to England to watch them because he thought they were a British band.
when I went to visit England, I was like, where does Jack White live? Goes, it didn't work out.
So the Air Supply discussion didn't go very far, but in Quadrophenia, boy, I'm going to get you guys. So are you guys ready for Quadrophenia?
Yes. Well, John? Just before we do, we have to say, we have to apologize to you because we knew that it was a bit fruity and saucy, the language at times, but I think we'd forgotten just how foul it is. And I really hope you didn't sort of gather the family around the TV and say, come on, kids, we're going to watch this quaint film from genteel Britain.
Fine. The language was fine. The only part, Roy, the only part you gathered your family around was the dual bathtub scene, right?
Yes. Before you even sum it up, Phil, is that a real thing? Do you not have a way to bathe in your own home? Do you have to go find a bathtub somewhere else?
It's made in the 70s and set in 64. So in 64, maybe? But no, it's not something we do now. We've pretty much got our own baths mostly.
Now you have your own. Okay.
Running water as well.
I mean, I think he had a bath in his house. I think it's just like, maybe it was just more normal for young people to just like, oh, I'm going to go to the Y, you know. And
there were definitely baths, like, where people went to bathe.
Yeah, it looked more like a Young Offenders Institute or something. It didn't look very welcoming. And no bubbles.
Yeah. No, you, and you need the bubbles.
Oh, inflatable tray with a cheeky glass of red.
I mean, you don't know who's staring over the divider. You got to have the bubbles.
Yeah.
But it could be Ray Winston.
Could be your best friend who turns out to be a rocker.
Could be Ray Winston, whom I did not recognize, by the way. Mm. I recognize someone else. But I'll get to that.
Oh, the cast is amazing. But yes, we're Sting, sorry about
did
the
you
language.
Recognize Sting, John? John, I don't want... spoiler alert, but that was Sting.
What? Yeah. The actor from The Bride?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
All right, John.
The actor from David Lynch's Dune? Okay. Okay, Quadrophenia. So Quadrophenia, it's a movie, and it's about rockers and mods, of whom I know no history. By the way, I went to middle school somewhere else. Roy and I, we've known each other since we were 10. And and so we went to elementary school together. And then I went off to middle school somewhere else. And then when I came back, I was like, hey, Roy, in the meantime, I've started listening to Depeche Mode and The Cure and stuff like that. And then Roy incessantly called me a mod.
Because that'll bully you, John.
That's weird because I was listening to Depeche Mode as well. So I.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you did. Well, okay. Yeah. Because I had my own mods and rockers experience when I came back into town and I met an old friend, kind of like Ray Winston in the street. And it was Roy. But in the meantime, but your primary listening was like classic rock. That was like what you got into, like in early high school.
Our high school was in a big classic rock thing. And then I'd say like towards the end of our high school experience was when grunge really took off.
Yeah.
So classic rock morphed into grunge pretty easily. But I mean, I listened to Depeche Mode and INXS. I never got into The Cure until I was an adult. But I at least had Depeche Mode going.
But the thing is, here's the thing. All the goth people, we didn't call them goth people in school. We called them mods.
Mods.
Yeah.
Where did we even get that word?
I don't know. It's just like just this weird vocabulary. You know, it's like 20 years after the actual mods happened, like which I didn't know about. Like, we didn't know about that.
We didn't know about it.
It was just like weird vocabulary words that kind of trickled down and then apply to some other cultural thing. Yeah.
But this was
the
crowd.
We had mods in Australia.
Did you?
Was it like goth people were mods?
No. Goths were different. I mean, goth there was definitely more of an when I came to England thing. But the mods in Australia looked a lot like the mods in Quadrophenia. And they had similar sorts of rules about clothing and haircut, and you know, the girls were only allowed to wear certain length skirts, and you had to buy a particular brand of t-shirts, and haircuts were all very sort of predetermined if you were going to be a certain mod. And there were different varieties, like boot girls and boot boys who weren't very nice, and if you wore Doc Martens and weren't one of them, then they would, quote, roll you for them, which was basically bash you and steal your shoes.
Because you didn't
deserve in Australia they were horribly expensive. So we definitely had something much more similar when I was in high school in Australia.
Yeah, so we got the language all mixed up. Like in mine and Roy's high school, like we were so far inland, I guess, that we started calling people mods, but it was a completely different thing. But it's interesting that it covered in Australia. And so that's probably why you like Quadrophenia so much, because you witnessed the mod thing happening in real life, or at least, you know, like cultural, you know, at least tangentially cultural similar things.
Yeah, and also I was an impossibly cool teenager, obviously.
Yeah. Awesome.
Were you a mod?
Bearing in mind.
He was a rocker.
Yeah, I think I wasn't one of them, definitely not. I was much more alternative, sort of cross between a hippie and a goth, I think.
Wow.
but we were also a bit naughty.
Yeah, it was those hippie slash goths that I really gravitated toward to in high school. Like, you know, I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, I wish I knew myself that well, you know, to be able to, to culturally do that.
Well, that was Quadrophenia.
Do you want to okay, let's talk about Quadrophenia. Sorry. So this guy, Jim, he is definitely a mod to the point where he bumps into an old friend, Ray Winston, right? And he's aghast that, you know, because he bumps into him naked. So it's like, okay, that's fine. We're cool. But when he sees that leather jacket go on his friend, he's just aghast. He's just appalled because he's a teenager, and the most important thing is his association and his group, his clan, his gang. And his gang is the, you know, the gang of local mods who ride their scooters around, have lots of mirrors, dress kind of more dapper and everything. And they're always just, they hate the rockers because the rockers beat them up for no reason. But it kind of seems like, you know, every time a rocker shoves one of them, then 100 of them beat up a rocker. That's just kind of what it looked like anyway, from the evidence I saw in this movie anyway. But the point is, he's just a guy, he's going around, he's trying to make eyes with the local grocery store teller lady, and she seems quite lovely, and she's really into the mod scene as well. Her hair doesn't say so, but her eyes say so, I believe. But the point is, they are trying to collect enough money and enough drugs to go to what I think might be the mod convention in Brighton.
Yeah, I think these sort of things did happen. These sort of unofficial gatherings would happen at Brighton and other seafront places.
Yeah. So let's just skip to Brighton. They have the time of their lives in Brighton because there's this huge rumble in the streets. Sting is there, and he's like King Mod, right? Mm-hmm. And the rockers attack. There are riots. There's a big rumble in the streets. Like, two of their gang accidentally sleeps in the same room as a bunch of rockers, and they get away from it. and he totally goes all the way with what's her name? Is her name Linda? The girl Steph. He likes? Steph. Sorry. And then they come back, and then he comes back, and he has trouble with his job. He quits his job. He takes all his money out. And I think, okay, ultimately what happens is he realizes maybe this scene that's so important to him, it's just not – it can't fulfill him for the rest of his life. And I think he has a hard time coming to terms with that. And so – he steals Sting's scooter. First of all, his scooter gets crashed and crushed. He loses his girl to another guy, and he steals Sting's scooter, and he rides along the cliffs of I assume the cliffs of Brighton?
Close.
About 15 miles up the road, Beachy Head.
Okay. Yeah, magnificent. I'd love to visit those someday. Those look really great. He rides the bike off. I assumed he just is so frustrated that he just jumps off the cliff. But I think I've read that, no, it was symbolic of him just disposing of his lifestyle, and he doesn't fall off the cliff. I don't know if anybody had
it. It's a Harold and Maude moment, right? Like at the end of Harold and Maude when he...
Yeah. It is just like that. So anyway, that's Quadrophenia. I just skipped to the end because it's mostly a... It's kind of a slice of life movie. It's not like A to B to C to D. It's pretty much just like we're hanging out with this kid, and this is his life.
Yeah.
And so it's just
kind of form over content.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about the vibe. But no, I think do you remember the very first scene in the film is him walking away
with
from
the sun behind
the cliff
him.
With the sun behind him. So I always take that to mean that's the rest of the film is how he got to that point.
Oh, I don't even remember that. I didn't write it down. Okay.
Scooter off the edge of the cliff and then walks away from it.
It's like the beginning is the end and the end is the beginning.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me know that, because I didn't get it.
So it's interesting because it feels like the movie is him trying to fit into this in-group, this mod group, and at the end it feels like the other mods aren't mod enough for him, or has he struggling to like figure out what his place is. Right, he kind of ends up rejecting his friends and spiraling out of control, and then the big body blow at the end is to find out that Sting actually has a respectable job, right?
A respectable job where he has to bow and scrape and toady.
Well, yeah,
middle-aged people.
By respectable, I mean an awful job, but like he's right. Like so, he pretends to be this big tough mod, but actually he has that job as a bellboy, right? And there's a song. Yeah. And I think the only lyrics in the song are "Bellboy, Bellboy."
Yep.
So like everything he thought he knew about being a mod or the mods that he looked up to, it's not what he thought, and he's kind of lost everything. He's lost his job. He's been kicked out of his house. And so you know, where does he go from there? And at the end of the movie doesn't really answer that, which is fine. It doesn't need to. So it's a fascinating film.
Fueled. By you know, being completely drug addled off his face, so he's not exactly making sensible decisions and thoughts.
Indeed, I only just thought just before we started recording, I've got no idea what quadriphenia means. Like
that was one of my questions that I was gonna. I'll just ask it now. Yeah.
Well, what Ricky's gonna say?
It's something to do with. Like it's the name of the Who album.
Yeah.
So it's to do with a type of music that is quad.
It was
something.
It was an early version of surround sound. It was called quadraphonic.
Mm. Yes. So it's to do with that.
So it's to do with that, and it's also
represents four stages of his
or four
personality.
It's language. Yeah, we wouldn't use now, but I believe that split members of the Who refer to as having a schizophrenia, split personality, which obviously we know is not. The same thing now.
And so each one is supposed to reflect this sort of
a band member of the Who.
Yeah.
But more generally, I think it's supposed to say there is a mental health aspect to it. I did the
courageous thing and I Googled it, and it says that it's a like dissociative identity disorder, and like you just said, it's supposed to represent the four different personalities of each member of the Who. So that's interesting.
By the way, big surprise for me: not a lot of Who in this movie.
But you got the Ronettes.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack, though. Loved it.
Yeah.
There's a fair bit of Who.
And I'm music, not so the Who biggest music, but
Who fan, but I think
no,
it's pretty
they
good.
Weren't in it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. No actual Who.
Yeah, I thought it would kind of be. I wasn't even sure what I thought. Like, because I knew Sting was in it, and I knew it was about mods versus rockers, and I think. I guess I assumed like all the music would be the Who, but like all the memorable stuff is like not the Who. I think maybe it's a bit brave of the Who to like have so many other great songs. And so like when I think of Quadrophenia, I'm not going to think of the Who now, you know?
So it's fascinating because there's a big moment at the beginning of the movie where he's at that party and Steph's dancing with her loser boyfriend whose name is Blaine. And Jimmy's upset by it, so he changes the stupid song and he puts on Generation by The Who, right? And there's kind of that. So
I made a note about that felt like what for me growing up, maybe a bit older, so in my 20s, like, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name of was a really similar song for me. That as soon as that came on, there was this great togetherness with my gang. And that moment when they're singing to My Generation, that definitely feels really warm and happy, and they're all together and they're singing together.
Yeah, everyone's got their version of that song, haven't they?
Yeah.
John, takes them back.
John, what's that song for us? I want to say it's Kiss Off by the Violent Femmes, but maybe I'm totally off base here.
For the two of us?
For the two of us. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. It might be that.
Okay. Oh, speaking of which, the Violent Femmes, they love the didgeridoo. So,
do anyway, they? Yeah. Nice.
I don't know where that's going, but there you go. Yeah, I saw them in concert, and there was at least a 20-minute section where it was basically just a didgeridoo solo, and good for them.
Well, okay.
Go ahead, John.
If your comment is related to didgeridoo, you should go first.
It is not.
Okay. All right, fine.
We've already exhausted didgeridoo don't do commentary.
Didgeridoo don't. Fair. Okay, I just want to... Are we supposed to like Jim very much?
I don't know. I don't like him or dislike him particularly.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because I think he's, like a lot of the other characters, are pretty horrible people, aren't they? Yeah. You know, Steph, we're initially attracted to.
Yeah.
And we think she's great, but then she turns out to be pretty nasty.
She messes him around a lot. And
yeah. Messes him around and then, you know, goes off with his best mate, speaking of whom, you know, we're supposed to like him too, but then he turns out to be a bit horrible. He leaves his best mate in Brighton and goes off with his best mate's girl.
Chalky was all right.
Yeah, Chalky was all right.
But
is it a journey of disillusionments for poor Jimmy? Also not helped out by his rampant drug use?
Like, it's all about the tribe, like Mickey was saying about Rage Against the Machine and the song that connects you with your tribe. That's obviously what it's all about, isn't it? I think it was John said that they're not mod enough for him. And I think he's not mod enough for himself. He's latched onto that as the thing that will give him an identity.
Yeah.
But it never quite manifests into what he thinks it should be.
Yeah.
So he hates himself for that, and he resents the other mods for letting him down. He just can't get what he wants. Someone sort of picks him up on it when he says he doesn't want to be like everyone else. And someone says, well, why do you all dress the same?
Yeah.
So it's this sort of dichotomy about finding yourself and being yourself, but also wanting to be part of a tribe.
That's when Kev said that he joined the army to be different.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really strange thing to say. I mean, I don't think you join the army to be different, do you?
Yeah, well, I mean, because Kev says that's like one of the things I was noticing. And I feel like I notice these things a little bit more now that I'm middle-aged now, you know? And so I watch this movie, and I think, and I could be wrong, but I think it's just being very skeptical about, you know, the tribes we make when we're young. And it's just like, okay, it's 'cause like when he talks to Kevin seems to be like, even though he's like in the opposite tribe, he's actually come to kind of a mature conclusion that's like, okay, you know what? These labels really don't matter that much. Like, we matter as individuals, but the labels don't matter that much. And then that's when Jim responds with, I want to be different. That's why I'm a mod, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they both say things about, you know, just like differing opinions of conformity and differing opinions on like the importance of said conformity. But it's like, I watched this movie and it seems so funny to me as like this unhip old man about how hard these kids are trying to be different when they're falling apart in their conformity, you know?
Yeah. It seems so important at the time, doesn't it? In that moment. And you're trying to find yourself and also trying to find your tribe. And that's possibly a contradiction.
Yeah. There's a, on the radio, I remember it was just like this dumb thing that I remembered. There's kind of this Hot Topic t-shirt that, that just has the statement that says, you laugh at me because I'm different. I laugh at you because you're all the same, right? You know, just this fun little shirt that you wear when you're young, you know, and it's kind of harmless, but a little bit, you know, kind of preachy. It's like, okay, settle down, kid. Like these guys on the radio, they talked about how, you know, they saw two punks. When I say punks, I don't mean like literal punks, but just these two kids who were just like, you know, disillusioned with life, and they're friends and they're walking around and they both happen to be wearing those two same t-shirts. And so I popped into my mind a little bit when it comes to the anti-conformity into conformity, you know?
Yeah. As weird as it seems, I see a lot of similarities between Walkabout and Quadrophenia in the sense that, like you said, John, there's kind of not much of a, Roy said about Walkabout, there's not much of a plot, and John, you kind of try to skip to the end because there's a very basic plot. They just let scenes unfold. Like I think the director said that literally about Walkabout. We had a very rough outline and we just went to places and thought, well, what should we film here, and just kind of made it up. And And when I was watching Quadrophenia again, I've seen it before, but when I was watching it this time, I thought it's almost more like a pop song than a film. It's like one long pop song because it's not really telling you a story in a traditional way, but it's all about the vibe. Yeah. It's all about the attitude, in the same way that pop music lyrics often aren't telling a simple, clear story, but it's just more about the feeling.
I disagree.
Oh, okay.
I think it is telling a story.
Well, yes.
There's very much a beginning and an end and experiences
yes, but it's very
in
simple.
Between.
Yeah, but,
it's simple, but also I think quite complex. There's quite a lot of stuff that goes on.
Yeah, I just think the complexity doesn't arise out of the plot. It arrives out of the characters.
Certainly not the conversation.
No, it's just you're just being shouted at for 2 hours.
I can feel the mod rocker tension.
Yeah, which one of you is the mod and which one of you is the rocker?
She's the mod, I'm
yeah,
the rocker.
Yeah.
So we have to choose.
And a whole lot of dad dancing as well.
Oh.
I think
dad dancing.
Things
definitely
appear in my awards.
Like I feel like, you know, I think Sting danced well, but you know, that's not like this. It's funny. It's not a like a. It's not this transgressive teenage thing, you know, that I would have expected. But although I think, you know what, I think Jim danced really well before he fell onto the crowd. It's kind of some cool moves.
I thought that was going to be the end of the movie. I thought that dive was not going to turn out well. Thank heaven.
I can't believe he didn't get hurt at all. I mean, he would have just hit everybody's head.
Yeah, I think it was quite a long way down, wasn't it?
It looked it, yeah.
A 20-foot dive into the audience.
Exactly.
Oh, and the other thing, other similarity I thought between them is, like John, you asked, are we supposed to like Jimmy?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like I said, I don't really think I like him or dislike him or many of the characters. And I think it was something I read in a review about Walkabout was that it was very non-judgmental of its characters morally. And I kind of feel the same about Quadrophenia. I mean, I wouldn't have liked them probably when I was that age. I wouldn't have hung around with Jimmy, that's for sure.
No.
But as much as he was, you know, a very troubled person and not someone I would have got on with, he wasn't a villain or an anti-hero. He's just a person. And I think that's kind of true of everybody in that film. They're just being young idiots. They're not, I don't think the film's inviting you to criticize or lionize them particularly. You just can, like I said, with Walkabout, it lets the action play out and leaves you to decide what to think about it.
I mean, I kind of felt it was a lot. It reminded me of myself a little bit. I think we all go through the stage where it's like, okay, we're rejecting things and accepting things. It was just a lot less fluid than like we come to terms with. The walls are just, the walls are so much bigger and the stance is so mm-hmm. much stronger. And,
yeah.
And it's just like navigating through that. Like, this is the thing I believe and I dismiss your rules, but like in dismissing rules, like you have to accept just as many rules back, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just figuring that out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't want to diminish this by calling it a coming of age film. This isn't like, Stand By Me. Right. But it kind of has that feel. I will say that as far as my experience and the experience that I had growing up with John, that some things take longer to get over than others. It's probably been 3 years now since John and I looted our last drugstore.
Yeah.
Hopefully you did a better job than they did.
We took so much shampoo.
Did you get some for your mom while you were there?
Mostly we just left with a bunch of loofahs. It was... All right. Well, do you guys have anything more you want to say, or are you ready to endure my stupid quiz?
Let's have your lightning round.
Mickey. Just want to highlight the fighting on the beach, in particular.
Oh, yeah.
The Kirk double fist.
Did you notice the Captain Kirk double fist
action?
Chalky does on the back of a rocker.
The fighting, especially in the sea, was very Trek.
There were some misfiring drop kicks as well, Kirk.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm going to watch that again. Thank you, Excellent. The double fist callback to Star Trek is always welcome here. Thank you.
Okay, you know what's coming. I'm going to mention a bunch of bands, and you're going to tell me modern rocker, because I really have no idea. Okay, the first one's a softball. This is a real easy one. The Who.
Mod.
Okay, very good. How about the Rolling Stones?
Rockers.
Rockers, yeah.
Okay, how about the Beatles?
Oh.
They're too goody-goody to be
Mocker.
I'd say mods.
Oh, yeah, didn't Ringo say that?
Ringo said
yeah, right. I mean, because they started off doing 50s rock and roll almost exclusively, which would put them firmly in the rocker camp, but then they weren't bound by it. So that's a trick question. So.
That was a trick question. Okay, The Cure.
I mean, again, if they're more goth, aren't
they're
they?
Goth.
So according to
your teenage years, they're definitely mods.
How about Billy Idol?
The Idol, definitely rocker. A rocker.
The Police.
Mods.
The White Stripes.
Rockers.
Barry Manilow.
rocker.
Yeah, sure.
He's a rocker. And finally, Air Supply.
And Bear Gun.
Rockers.
Mods.
I think Air Supply, they're real rockers. They're rockers, dang it. Okay, that's all I have. That was my stupid quiz. So
awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, we have another movie that has a plot. And
I was going to say, for the third time in a row, zero plot. No plot to this next movie. Nothing happens in the Abyss. No events happen.
That's why it's called The Abyss.
Yeah.
The Abyss. All right, okay. Mickey, this is all yours.
We're going to try and sum it up. It might be difficult because it's quite long, and it feels even longer than it is.
Yes.
And in fact, it feels so long, I think it might still be going on somehow. It came out 33 years ago, but I think somewhere it's still playing.
And that's the theatrical version.
And that was the theatrical version. We didn't even watch the special edition. My goodness.
Oh, good. I was going to call you guys and check to see which version, but I'm like, well, I don't want to watch the long version, so I'll just watch the short version. So that's
Exactly the same discussion in reverse.
Okay. The Abyss is a story where a submarine carrying nuclear warheads encounters an unknown entity, thereafter known as non-terrestrial
intelligence.
It mostly encounters a cliff, I thought.
And it crashes into the cliff after encountering this weird being.
And it didn't even stop to exchange insurance details, which is a shame.
And following this, an underwater gas platform oil rig is drafted in to help the Navy SEALs to recover the submarine, and unknown to them, the nuclear warheads. But then disaster strikes when there's this big storm, leaving the underwater rig untethered and floating towards the great drop-off, very, very close to where they're parked. In addition, the SEAL leader gets the bends and goes completely loopy.
Yep. In a very telegraphed move.
Yes.
If you don't clock straight away that this guy is going off the deep end.
Or at least somebody's going to go off the deep end. After which there's multiple encounters with these strange and beautiful entities from the depths. There's ships and people going over the edge into the depths. There's near-death and death experiences. And eventually, our hero saves the entities from the nuclear warhead, and they forgive us for being terrible and make friends and save the crew of the rig from freezing to death / running out of air.
Yeah.
Wow. That was a good summary. Yeah, I was under the impression it would take a long time to summarize, but that was a good summary.
Yeah, it was actually.
We cut a lot out. Unfortunately, the director didn't.
But honestly, you summed it up really well. You very economically summed it up, and you didn't miss very much. I do want to say at least an hour of the film was our hero Bud falling into the abyss. That part took an hour, and I don't think he came back up to the ship. I think he was rescued from like the ocean on the other side of the planet.
He just kept falling because the
center of this Earth is just an ocean. It's just water. Everyone knows that.
Well, okay. Yeah. So
I guess I forgot to mention in that, Precy, that the two leading characters who had been in love and then fallen out of love fell back in love again.
Yeah.
And that's love why aliens don't kill us, because they loved each other.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Because they were going to, it was going to be like this Star Trek thing, you know, like the Enterprise comes upon like some aliens that are super powerful and they say, you are too violent for the rest of, you must be destroyed because you're too violent. And, you know, and they're like, well, you're being hypocritical, but yeah, I guess we are pretty violent. But the aliens, they see the love of Ed Harris and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, and they're like, okay, maybe humans should survive, so let's just give them a free ride back up.
So, show us more of this Earth thing called kissing.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, and so the actress, what's her name? Mary Elizabeth Mastriano.
I think is the easiest.
Yeah,
I wrote down
MEM. You could call her Lindsay. Yeah.
She has incredible hair.
She does. Yeah.
Yep. That's all I can say. That I'm done with my comments. So.
Interestingly, she does have slightly similar hair to mine, doesn't she? It's quite unruly and hard to tame.
Yours is less unruly. Yours is barely.
Is she also Australian?
No, I think she is American. Yes.
Yeah, what else to say about this film?
Hey.
I think we could say it sags in the middle, is what I might say.
So, but how cool was this movie when it came out? Which, by the way, I didn't see when it came out.
I didn't see it either. It was like one of those things that happened, yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of an event, right? Because there was crazy technology that was supposed to be real in this movie. And then also, like, a ton of the special effects that were pioneered in this film led to us being able to enjoy Terminator 2. A lot of it directly transferred over, and that of course
that's true. Yes, it's quite T-1000-y, isn't it?
I haven't seen it for a long time, and I did enjoy it in the 90s a lot. With time, rewatching it, and I guess I might have a more critical eye than I used to have.
This is very diplomatic answer.
Mickey, tell us about how this is the most important movie to you in your life.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, at the time, it was a movie that I watched with my brother and sister-in-law who live in Australia, so I don't see them very often. And, you know, there were certain aspects of it that we really enjoyed. You know, we all love watching sci-fi. It's nice to have a sort of, you know, sci-fi fantasy that's based in our time on Earth. Because, you know, a lot of them are in space. And I think, again, at the time, we just really liked the characters and the sort of concepts and, yeah, the cool technology.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the actors, you think Ed Harris, Michael Biehn, James Cameron.
Yeah.
How can it go wrong?
And I think, as I said, this was from a while ago, and yes, there are plenty of other much better movies that have been made since.
Okay, I just have to jump in. Am I the only person who liked this movie? Are we just
no,
people?
No, I liked it. No, not. As I say, I love it. It's one of my favorite films.
I'm being a bit harsh on it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it plenty.
Let me say this. I love the artistic movies. I love Walkabout and Quadrophenia and like what they mean and, you know, how they tap into certain things that only film can do. But ultimately, you know, also, you know, kind of in contrast, I watch The Abyss, and from the moment that the rig falls into the ocean and pulls on the cable and then falls into the thing and then tugs on the oil rig back down into the abyss, from that point of the movie on, I'm eating the popcorn, man. It's a very popcorn-y kind of thing. And Michael Biehn's wild eyes and all of that stuff. And the mustache, the way his mustache has a personality of its own. Yeah. I kind of felt like it was a bit slow at the beginning. But there's something about, you know, just an old fashioned James Cameron movie where it's just like people yelling, the right amount of people yelling at each other and the right amount of special effects and the right amount of, like, you can tell they were actually there filming it.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
And nice, and characters that you can get on board with, that, you know, you don't have to hate the characters because they're not all nasty. Yeah. It's quite nice to have people that are like proper salt the earth good heroes.
Yeah. Well, I'm affectionately ribbing it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
But they could have cut half an hour out of that.
So the alien water face thing has the ability to open doors.
Yes, I noticed that.
Okay, so that's cool. So, but speaking of like filming it in the location, if you read anything about this movie, everyone who was involved in this movie hated making this movie.
I'm not like, surprised.
There's,
I haven't
there's
read
trauma
about
that
it.
Came out of this film.
It sounded terrible, terrible, terrible. Yeah.
I guess Ed Harris punched James Cameron in the face after one scene where he nearly drowned.
Yeah,
and like. So when you see that scene where he's towing MEM's body after she has drowned, right? Like, that's underwater, and she's really is just holding her breath. And so I guess, like, filming this movie was just awful.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about the production. I'm actually quite interested to read up on it. But when I was watching it, all the time I was thinking, this must have been so hard to make, so expensive, so time-consuming. They must have had huge tanks of water, and they've got to get underwater cameramen.
Yeah.
And
he did have huge tanks
of
water.
And the set is amazing. I mean, is it a set or is it a location? I don't even know, but it's...
I think it's a set.
It's a set.
It's amazing. Some of those long corridor scenes are just... Mm-hmm.
There was a... I want to say it was a decommissioned nuclear power plant that had a giant tank that they used for the underwater set.
Well, it's... Yeah, some of the... You know, the practical filmmaking elements of it were really impressive. I thought this must have been, it must have been hell to make and must have taken forever. So I definitely admire it in that sense.
Yeah. Okay, so let me talk. We have to talk about, like, the two end sequences that I was just like, about. The plan, the most aggravating part of the movie was, you know, when Ed Harris and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, the water is coming in, and they only have the one suit to make it back. And he's like, you take the suit. And she's like, no, you're a better swimmer. You bring a suit back. And he's like, no, that's not enough time. And so they come up with a plan. Okay, hear me out on this. I die, and then you revive me. And he's like, are you sure? And she's like, yeah, I'm sure. And then he spends 30 seconds not swimming with her. Like, or 30 seconds to a minute, and if I were her, I'd be like, why aren't you swimming already? Like, he had to wait for her to die before?
It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
I'd never understand that. Why on earth exactly did that happen? As soon as they made the decision, he should have just gone with her.
But you said you were going to die. That was my favorite part of the plan. Get on with it.
I know. Like, if I were her, I'd be like,
so... At least he gets to stick around and watch it happen.
Yeah,
right?
Is he waiting for me to die so that he doesn't have to do the plan? Like,
the only thing I can think as an explanation...
She might struggle in the water while
exactly.
she's dying.
That is what I was going to say. That's the only explanation I can think of, that she might struggle and fight him. But she didn't struggle and fight him that much in the... You know, in the confined space that they were in.
Hmm. Why didn't she just breathe the water?
Yeah, because you can breathe water.
Yeah, because you can breathe water.
And that's the other thing we have to talk about.
I'm being facetious. It's only special special water that is hyper-oxygenated, right? So
and pink.
Yeah. And it's pink in the movie. I remember my high school chemistry teacher said, well, you can't breathe fluid. You know, because it would be like liquid oxygen and that'd be too cold. But I was very surprised, and I don't know if I'm being trolled, but according to the trivia of this movie, that whole breathing fluid, like, not fluid, I guess air is fluid, but like the breathing liquid thing actually does exist, apparently.
Well, as we've said, Mickey is a medical doctor, so let's hear it from the horse's mouth. Sorry, dear. Can you breathe liquid?
Well, I think the term breathing liquid is not right, and he was making breathing movements whilst having oxygen diffusing across his, small, tiny lung sacs, alveoli.
Question then, can you exchange oxygen through a liquid medium in your lungs?
Yes, I would have thought so.
Why do we drown then?
Because there's not enough oxygen. Okay. I would have thought.
Okay.
I don't know. I could be completely.
So the scene with the mouse, where they're demonstrating it, that's real.
According to what someone said, though, it's real.
Really?
If you believe the trivia, that is 100% real. Yeah. That they have that mouse in oxygenated water, and the mouse acclimates and breathes the water.
If you can believe,
but they didn't show it. Did they?
IMDb trivia.
They showed it.
Yeah, they showed it.
I think they showed enough, and like they showed the water like in and out
the cage.
So
yeah.
As an aside on that, do you know the website? Does the dog die?
I don't know that. I assume it's like an animal.
It's not just treatment. The dogs. It's a website where you can go on and you can look up any film, and it will give you, like, as far as they can, spoiler-free information about things that might trigger you. So, like, some people just don't want to see a dog die in the film, or, you know, suicide, or, you know, anything like that. You can look them up. So, and I did have to, after the rat's second brush with death, I did have to go on to see if the rat survived, because I was going to be very upset if it didn't.
So my understanding,
the rat died of old age, I think.
But they had to cut the shot short because the rat, I guess, evacuated his bowels during the panic of the moment, and that would have been gross.
But then they just had their faces.
I wish they'd had Ed Harris do that in his suit,
just pooping. I do have a couple questions. One's not a question. When he has to decide what wire to cut, both of those wires are identical in the filming. It's intentionally identical colors. So in case I thought I was just having problems with my color blindness, I wasn't. So
because they were shining that weird green light on it that made it look like the blue and the yellow and gold dress. Right. So he was doing one of those things. According to Katie, by the way, if you are deep enough in the ocean, like light wavelengths don't work the same way.
So there's a new National Geographic special on Disney Plus with Will Smith where they go deep, 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 and they talk about how certain colors start filtering out at different levels.
Yeah.
Really?
And so like he had a shirt that was a certain color on the surface, and then they get several thousand feet down and now his shirt was red because
apparently
certain colors were
only red exists in the deepest depths of the ocean. It's only red. So
which would make sense.
Only communism exists.
Penetration and diffraction and stuff.
So I do have to ask this question because the concern is the nuclear bomb exploding in the depths. But if the nuclear bomb is as deep as Ed Harris was, that was several miles down.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have done anything.
I don't think it would have done much. So my understanding from looking it up is that a nuclear bomb creates, like, for a split second, it creates a bubble about a half a mile in size, and then it immediately collapses on itself. So that probably has a really horrific impact on everything within a mile or so, but it seems like if that nuclear weapon is miles below the surface.
This is what I understood about the movie. Why were they going down to get the bomb? Why did they even care?
To save the aliens so the aliens wouldn't think that we hate them?
Yeah. It was that big a deal that, like, if it was just a bunch of fish, I mean, come on.
Contamination of the sea as well?
Yeah, it could have caused tsunami or something, I assume.
So possibly that makes sense, but I also read that water is a great absorbent of radioactive material, and so it would have remained localized and at that deep that the pressure would have kind of held it together.
Wow.
But anyway,
well, they were a bunch of suckers then, weren't they?
I think I don't think they were in any danger at all, although they were kind of trapped in the ocean, right? They couldn't get back up anyway. So may as well save a bunch of weird aliens.
I do want to remark on the final hero scene where Ed has been dropped back off by the aliens and he's being reunited with his friends. He's about 300 yards away from them and he drops his helmet, and the Foley artist decided to make it sound like he was standing right next to us. Like, there's a loud clunk.
He did appear. They didn't have to go very far, did they, to be in each other's arms? It felt like that was a very short journey.
That was
when it looked like
my favorite. Miles, my
you know
favorite
about the Monty
part?
Python scene in Holy Grail, where the,
the guy's running up to the castle.
Yeah,
and then they're like really close to each other. That's it. Felt like that a bit because when they looked at him, it was he was really far away. It would have taken him a good minute or two to get to her.
Got no romance in your soul, Lassner.
I'm sorry.
The end part was the best because like the crew comes out of the oil rig that's been raised up by the alien platform, and they open the hatch, and then they're like, "Oh, whoops! We shouldn't have opened the hatch because we depressurize and we'd all be dead by now." But we're not dead by now. Alien magic.
Alien magic.
Yeah. Good old alien magic.
At least they put that in, though. God bless them. They were trying.
They tried so hard, like, because there was so much stuff about pressure that I didn't understand. Like, because they have to go into the pressure room for 15 minutes. They talk about all of this. They make a big deal about talking about all of this, which is why that line at the end is so funny, because like, oh, we should have all exploded when we opened the hatch, but we didn't. But like, you go in and you get, I don't know, just things blowing on you for 15 minutes, but then they say it takes 3 weeks to depressurize after that before you can go to the surface. And I was like, I don't understand air or water pressure at all.
So it's longer. It's definitely longer than 15 minutes. I mean, she said 8 hours. We have to be in here for 8 hours.
Oh, okay. She said that. Okay.
And then they immediately, you know, the next scene was them coming out. Mm-hmm. So I think they did a little bit of a time.
Well, those 8 hours were filmed.
They didn't make us sit through the 8 hours. That's the special edition.
So if any of you guys... Have any of you scuba dived?
No. I can't swim.
Oh,
and
nice.
I can swim, but I have never scuba dived because of my dodgy ears.
And dodgy rest of you.
And sinusitis and dodgy rest of me. So I've snorkeled.
Snorkeling's lovely, isn't it? And snorkeling's free.
It was lovely right up until the point where I was pretending to be a mermaid and then inhaled an entire snorkel full of seawater.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do
that. That's what mermaids
then
do.
Then I actually became a little bit like Bud when he was inhaling the pink water.
Yeah.
Only this weird noise came out and it felt very strange.
Snorkeling was lovely for 10 minutes until, like, I dipped my snorkel under the first time. And then I'm like, yeah.
John, was your first snorkeling when you visited in Hawaii? Or had you been before?
No, I think I went snorkeling in Egypt, maybe?
That makes sense.
Yeah, it may have been, so I guess I've done it twice, but I've been scared both times. And I would love to go scuba diving. That seems like it would be really amazing, but...
So,
I am a very poor swimmer. I can barely swim, barely survive. And
so my wife and I, we certified for scuba diving. And it's funny because during my wife's test, she's such a bad swimmer. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to tread water for a minute. And every 20 seconds, she just had to grab something to stay afloat. And after 5 minutes of that, our instructor said, "I get it. You suck at floating. Let's move on." But so the point I guess I'm trying to make is that like I've only gone 100 feet down. It's not that far, right? But you can feel the pressure pretty quickly. Mm. And so it kind of amazes me that the little mini handheld thing that propels him like collapses in on itself at a certain depth, but his cloth suit is still protecting his body pretty well.
Yeah.
And that was my issue with the nuke. Is that, you know, all the submersibles the little geek and everything all get crushed above the level where the nuke does. But this nuke is pristine and seems to not be affected by the pressure. It doesn't get squished. And that's not been built for it. You know, the submersibles have been built to withstand huge pressures. Even they get crushed, but the nuke doesn't at all.
Mm. So this movie's not entirely scientifically accurate, potentially. No.
Unless it's the best nuke money can buy.
Well, it's American-made, so I'm assuming that it's made by the Airstream folks. They know how to make a silver bullet. Yeah.
No, I got an emergency text from Katie just now. She's saying it's only blue light in the deep ocean. Blue light.
Okay. Oh, thank heavens we fixed that. Oh my gosh.
She says red is first to go. So a lot of deep sea creatures are red themselves, so they'll appear black. Actually, everything down there looks gray. They could have shot the movie in black and white, and it would be accurate. So, yeah, just the razzle-dazzle of James Cameron, shooting it in color, bottom of the ocean.
What won't he do next?
Man. Oh, talking to James Cameron, boy, this was like 3 years after Aliens, and you can really tell he's trying to recreate the Aliens vibe with a lot of it. He cast Michael Biehn, and that whole thing of... you know, the military come in after a disaster. They're looking for survivors.
Yeah.
Everyone's dead. And the claustrophobic kind of industrial feel. You can tell he's kind of trying to hit some of those same notes and make the same magic.
Mm.
Which is why he's actually going to direct again the next Terminator film, and it all takes place in the abyss.
Underwater Terminators.
Yeah, which, you know, if you don't go looking for them, you're probably just fine. Anyway, you guys want to do some awards or what?
Yes,
we have to. I mean,
yes,
it's gonna happen. So,
do you want to do contact information really quick? As is our
new John, you're the best at that. When I say it, I ramble, but you have a very professional advertisement voice. So
no, I don't.
A word from our sponsor, John, who is going to tell us all about this wonderful podcast.
If you've listened so far, we want to hear from you. Send us an email at yoursminetheirspodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you want to download any old episode of the podcast, you can do that with direct MP3 downloads. It's very nice, very easy. No weird players you have to do or whatever. And that's yoursminetheirspodcast.blogspot.com. Now, go to Facebook and find our group there. It's a podcast. It's called Yours, Mine, and Theirs. It might be the most important for you because you can vote in the polls and you can decide what we all watch together. And that's the biggest deal. Also, Roy takes all his notes on the movies there, and they are better than his actual real-life person voice. So it's really great.
It's true.
And let's see. The next thing we got to do is... Oh, okay. You can find us on Spotify these days, which is crazy. And I don't know, I'm not a member of Spotify, but if you can rate us there, that would be really great. Give us 5 stars on Spotify. Also iTunes or the podcast equivalent. I think it's just called Apple Podcast these days. Give us 5 stars there and then say whatever you need to say. And lastly, before I forget, give us a ring, send us a message. I promise I won't answer the phone. Leave us a voicemail at 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. We promise we'll play at least 5 seconds of your message. So go ahead and do all of those things.
And where's your Patreon?
Our Patreon is – we haven't been able to set one up yet. I was like wondering if we were to do a Patreon and we said, hey, you know, give us $5 a month. I'm not asking you to give us $5 a month because that's absurd.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if you were to pay for extra content – Like what would the Patreon rewards be? Like, what could Roy and I do, or Roy and I and you and Mickey do, if you want to get in on this?
It's hard to imagine it could get better than this. No, it's a good question. I don't know. You guys probably don't have the time to do much more, do you?
No, we don't really have. I mean, we do have time. I guess if we were getting paid for it, we could find the time. But. Let's just say time is no object.
Maybe video.
Like, I subscribe to the Delta Flyers podcast and pay for that.
What are they
on Patreon?
That's Garrett Wong and what's his face? It's Ensign Kim and
Paris. Harry Potter. Paris.
They rewatch Voyager and.
Oh, that, really?
About the episode. Yeah, it's really, really good. Yeah.
Is it good? Oh, that sounds fun. That sounds fun.
And, you know, their sort of Patreon extras go up in price, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the sort of minimum stuff is a much more in-depth conversation about each episode, and they have guest people and interviews and, you know, awards and things like that. And also
They know a lot of famous people.
Access
to
video. Yeah. But, and I think
you know, I often listen to them when I'm traveling long distances, so I don't do the video when I'm driving. But if I can, I like to watch the video just because it's nice to see the expressions, and I think you get a different experience.
Okay, I'm writing all these down. Maybe we'll do it.
You could do swag. Make some stickers and things. Post out swag to people.
Yeah, we might have to. If we open up a Patreon, I have a feeling it would just be Roy and I paying each other $5 a month.
I'm willing to.
We'd contribute, definitely.
I was thinking about it because I heard your name, John, on the Trekking Through Time and Space as the captain level.
So Phil, you know you have to call me Captain John Matson now. You hear my name mentioned as the patrons every week of Trekking Through Time and Space, right?
Mm. Yes, my apologies, sir.
So I will say I'm willing to act out every nude scene in any movie that we happen to watch.
Like audio nude scene?
No, video. I will act it out.
Okay.
So we'll throw that on there.
I will video act out every profane scene.
Maybe we need to do a script reading of Quadrophenia. A table reading of the script of Quadrophenia.
We could do stuff like that. Okay, the opportunities are limitless. We're just like, so far away. It's incredibly far away. Actually, while we're talking though, and you two, you're probably not going to be able to do this. Because
you're coming.
Because you're already coming. Yeah. But we should just mention to everybody who's listening this far that we're planning on doing a live event. We're planning on getting a theater. We're planning to watch three movies right in a row if you want to bother to do that. And that's the planned date is July 1st. And so then we're going to do that, and then we're going to just record an episode live so you can, you know, you can share your awards with us, like right with us and everything. We think it'll be really fun. We'll at least have some treats there that people can have, maybe. So, or popcorn, something like that. So July 1st, everybody write it down because that's when the day is. Yeah,
I'm going to bring two giant black garbage bags full of popcorn.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's what we'll have that.
So that'll be good.
Well, yeah. All right. That's going to be fun.
Awards time.
Awards time. Lord. All right. Jonathan, what's your favorite movie title?
Movie title, Quadrophenia. I like it even more now that I kind of know what it is, that there's quad in the title, that it's each member of the Who, and it's like has something to do with like a split personality combining into like one unit.
Well, very good. What about you, Phil?
I agree. Slim pickings on this, but I went Quadrophenia because even though I have now looked it up and I know what it means, it's sort of impressive that before I knew what it meant, I knew that it meant Quadrophenia, you know what I mean? It just became its own identity. And if you can just coin a new crazy word and make people remember it and know what it means, it's probably quite a good title.
Mickey, are you going to make it a hat trick?
I am, yeah. Quadrophenia. It's just, yeah, it's a word straight out of my adolescence. And it's also sounds vaguely medical.
It does.
So I quite like it.
And it's a great score in Scrabble.
Very, very good. So because the title has the word quad in it and there's four of us, let's just make it official. That's the best title.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Oh, let's see if we can do this again.
Quaddy.
Lovely.
Best movie poster, Mickey.
Walkabout, the non-swimming version.
Okay. All right.
The nice yellow painting.
I love the Walkabout poster. It looks great. Phil, what do you got?
Walkabout also.
John.
I thought we were just going to pick Quadrophenia from here on out, but I guess you guys broke it. I picked Quadrophenia because, actually, I don't know, like, it's got that Sopwith Camel circle behind him. Yeah. I don't know what that means, actually.
It's just like the Who's logo, isn't it?
It is, yeah, the Who's logo.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that makes it less cool. Not that the Who aren't great.
I don't know. I don't dislike the Who, but I like don't know the Who. You know, I don't know Who mythology or whatever. I actually went with Quadrophenia because I feel like the Who logo is actually a target on his head, which is how he feels. Mm. So
nice,
yeah,
very cool. Nice. So I just barely changed mine to the Walkabout. so anyway,
the non-swimming version.
The non-swimming version. It's time for your favorite movie tagline, John.
Okay, my favorite movie tagline. Where is it? Okay. It's for the Abyss, and it's he made your heart pound with the Terminator, but then he stopped it with aliens. Yada yada yada. Here's the Abyss.
That's what it said.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Phil? What's your favorite tagline from these movies?
Well, I went for A Way of Life.
A Way of Life. Very good.
Quadrophenia, but also could be Walkabout.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Oh, could we interchange the taglines? Can we say this is the best tagline for this other movie that wasn't on the poster?
Yes.
All right. Mickey, what's your favorite tagline?
Well, interestingly, I originally went for The Abyss because of that he made you blah, blah, blah. But then I thought that probably I wasn't sure if that was the actual tagline. So then I went for the Walkabout, the Aborigine and the girl 30,000 years apart together.
Very good. So I did A Way of Life as well. So that's two votes for that. So that wins. It wins. Okay. So now we have to do alternate taglines. Mickey, I want to hear if you got to write the taglines for these three movies, what would they be?
Okay, so Walkabout, I did have a really long one, which I realized probably wasn't a tagline, but it was pretty funny.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Feel free about it. Okay, so I can do my long one, which probably isn't a tagline, my short one. So my long one is boy meets girl, girl pretends not to notice boy's attentions, boy overreacts, girl moves on.
Timeless story.
Boy dies in a tragic blimp accident. Good year? No, the worst.
Not bad.
That was from Naked Gun. We'll just watch that. Yeah.
But I also did a shortened version, which was sometimes you should just walk away.
Very good.
Quadrophenia?
Quadrophenia, turns out you can have too many blues.
Oh, that's really wow. That's really good.
And Le Abyss.
And The Abyss. Aliens meets Avatar meets E.T. Under the Sea.
Nice.
Very good. All right, Phil, what do you got?
Walkabout. Heat, death, and decay is coming, so you might as well get naked. Quadrophenia, when your bird's a right liberty taker and your bonce is in a proper 2 and 8, get on your motor and go and have a Barney with a right bunch of Muppets.
Oh, my gosh, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And The Abyss, water and moustaches don't mix.
All right, John, what do you got?
All right, okay. I am proud of the brevity that I took this time. Okay, for Walkabout, it's about walking.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
For Quadrophenia, Vespa presents ... And then for The Abyss, once again, it's up to oil drillers to save the earth, and then open parentheses, or for the first time if you haven't seen Armageddon, and then another open parentheses, oh wait, this movie came out first, and then double close parentheses after that.
Nice.
Very excellent. Good.
Okay. All right, for Walkabout, I have Every Kid in Australia Has to Do This for Reals. Quadrophenia, I have You Taken Enough Blues? Rubbish. And for The Abyss, it's deep. Real deep.
Nice. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Best opening credits, John.
Opening credits. Quadrophenia, Jim riding the scooter tortoise.
All right, what do you think, Phil?
Yeah, Quadrophenia, because there's a really good soundtrack to it, and the other two films didn't really have opening credits, as far as I can recall.
No, I wrote down... Sorry.
Go ahead, Mickey.
Oh, I wrote down The Abyss, but I think that's because I didn't think that there were actual opening credits, but can I change my mind and go for Quadrophenia?
Please.
You're allowed to, yeah. You can if you want, but you can also respect a movie for not... Like, if your whole thing is, like, I hate opening credits, then you can pick the one that doesn't have opening credits.
I mean, I quite like the sort of, you know, it solemnity and scary like really big, sort of The Abyss. Yeah.
So, they're good.
I assumed before the submarine crashed that it came into close contact with the Hunt for Red October submarine. So anyway, all right. So very good. So best opening credits, Quadrophenia. If we all pick that, then there's four again. Yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Best titular line. I'm going to go first. Dang it. So I have, I love you, Lindsay, but I must go into the abyss. And that's what Bud probably says.
Oh. Nice.
All right, Mickey, what do you got?
I didn't find any, so
I don't think there was one.
I haven't got any.
I'll have to make one up
while you guys talk.
Yeah, Walkabout is the only one. It's the only
Walkabout is like, yeah, but that's the beginning. It's like the Star Wars beginning explanation of what a walkabout is.
Yeah,
isn't
but
it?
but it's in the film.
Okay, Walkabout then.
I have a different Walkabout one.
John, let's hear it.
The girl says to her brother, "You shouldn't walk about in the sun. It's bad for you."
When does she say that?
He does say that. I wrote it down. I'm like,
That's good. That's good.
That is good.
All right. Okay. Then moving on to best technology, John.
Technology. Here it is. Okay. Well, when Ed Harris gets sucked down into the alien city, I like how they have the wave curtains just gently open up into an air room that he can just stand up and breathe in. Mm.
I like the white boy's wind up rowing boat. He plays with on the billabong.
That's pretty good. All right, Mickey, what do you got?
I loved the cute little mini geek, the little ship.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
With the teeth.
Oh, the little aqua drone.
Yeah.
The little, he was cute.
Well, so Everyone avoided it because it was the most obvious answer. So I'll go ahead and take water breathing.
Water breathing. I almost picked water breathing.
Yeah.
I have to. Can I mention really quick? Just as far as like believing things on IMDb trivia, because you know that whole water breathing thing was an IMDb trivia.
Yeah.
Another IMDb trivia was that Ed Harris, like when it filled up his helmet with fluid, according to the trivia, his helmet really filled up with fluid. And he had to act, and then they emptied the helmet, and then he would cough, and then they would fill up his helmet again. And I don't believe that. I just think someone made that up, because it like looks really real, but all you have to do is just make double pane glass in his face thing and just fill that up. And if they actually literally filled his helmet up full of, then I'm like, I'm just saying I don't believe that.
So if I
fancy coffee cup.
He did the No Surprises Radiohead video before they did it.
If I'm logged in...
I need to see that.
If I'm logged into IMDb, can I put my own trivia in here?
I've never submitted trivia, but I feel like, if you log in...
There's an edit button.
Then you can. Is there?
Add one item. I can add an item of trivia. What should I put for Walkabout?
Why don't you do what you said earlier, which is that every single person in Australia has to go on one of these.
Or you could mention the feral camel population. The
feral camel population. Oh, you may be right, John. I think it's possible. I don't know if there's someone who goes through and has to check people's stupid stuff. I can add an item to the trivia as long as I'm logged in, because I'm paying for that privilege.
Reading IMDb trivia is like my favorite thing to do after I see a movie. Every movie I watch, I open up the IMDb trivia and I look at it. And if it's like a James Bond movie or something, then it inevitably has about 300 entries, and about 200 of those are just really dumb things that probably aren't true and are just dumb things like this scene in the lair took 8 days to shoot. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting, you know?
So, Mickey, what's your favorite name of any of these characters?
Virgil,
okay. Oh, that's good. What about you, Phil?
I think Chalky.
Think Chalky.
Nice British nickname.
Oh, good job, you guys.
What about Chalky. You, John?
I picked Ace Face.
Ace Face.
Yeah, that's Ace Face would have been my second choice. Mm.
John, what's your favorite food that you that they ate in these movies?
Okay, well, it's in the movie, but we don't see it. But over the radio at the beginning of Walkabout, when you just hear the radio stuff,
oh, gross.
There is the preparation for the ortolan, the where you like can a bird and cognac or something, and
you drown
the preparation
it.
Of that, and it's illegal now. If anybody ever watches that HBO show Succession, they talk about ortolan and how it's just the food of the weirdly privileged. Ortolan. It's just this, yeah. It's this weird
thing. Sounds like they went to war with the Klingons.
Yes, it does. Yeah, but it's this weird, bizarre thing.
Well, there you go. What about you, Phil? Did you see something delicious?
I think it was either delicious or disgusting, which is there's often a fine line. I like the underdone salmonella ridden fried egg sandwich that one of the mods enjoys in the cafe.
That did look good, man.
Just, the yolk just disappears, just drips out of his mouth.
I love a runny yolk sandwich.
All right, Mickey.
I can't remember if I made this up.
Probably.
You can correct me. You know when they were doing the shots of him killing the kangaroo, and they were also showing the butcher?
Yes.
And then wasn't there like a scene of delicious-looking, rare slices of steak?
There were.
Yes, and, I think so.
I put it's kangaroo that. For my choice as well.
Yes, it was that what I wanted to eat.
That kangaroo was ripped, by the
way. Yeah, he was really ripped.
Well, I was going to say he was shredded, and then he probably was later.
Do they eat kangaroo? Like, was, can you get a kangaroo burger? I think I heard from...
Of course. Okay. Kangaroo is very common.
And crocodile.
Meat these days.
Really? Wow.
Very lean, as you can tell by how shredded he is. They're very muscular animals.
By the way, I thought for sure one of you would pick the T-1000 alien as food because I against all impulse when Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio is like, oh wow, this is an alien, and she reaches over and tastes it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have done that.
Yeah, that was a bit weird.
Yeah.
All right.
Everyone else looked a bit shocked in the room, to be fair.
Mickey, what's your favorite outfit from any of these movies?
I think the chap that we shall call Indigenous Australian Boy's ceremonial outfit, which was mostly paint.
The dance outfit.
And
paint,
some feathers. Yeah.
That's
his
very
dancing
good.
Outfit.
Yeah.
What about you, Phil?
I enjoyed Maid Marian cosplaying as Marty McFly.
Very
good.
She's got the sort of blue denim shirt and the red body warmer thing.
Yeah,
the life preserver.
The life preserver.
Yeah. The life preserver. That's right.
All right.
Okay, that is Maid Marian. Okay.
John, what's your choice?
All right. Well, I was going to pick the skeleton Aboriginal makeup thing, but I since that's been picked already, I'm going to fall back on Sting's silver dance suit.
Oh man, that matches his Vespa.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did look good.
Yeah, better than his Nazi leather trench coat thing.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm also going with Sting, who looked so good in his bellboy, especially with that hat.
Oh, the hat.
Yeah.
With the elastic under his chin.
All right. Yeah. So there's literally a correct answer to who the best alien is, John.
Well, okay. There are a few different ones, but the one that I just talked about, where Lindsay tasted the alien, that specific alien, the one that looked like a portal from Donnie Darko or whatever, that one,
an astral projection.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, very good, Phil. What's your favorite alien, or maybe the most delicious alien?
I went for the feral camel, which is not native to Australia, but was imported.
Oh, wow.
By
very good.
Those terrible Brits.
Mm. And Mickey, your favorite alien?
See, I could also go that way and say that the white boy and girl were my favorite aliens because they also were not indigenous to Australia.
Yeah. Very good. So I went with the abyss alien that held Ed Harris's hand. It reassured him.
Everything's going to be okay. Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite special effect, Mickey?
I mean, the obvious answer is the abyss, but then maybe the Aussie outback. There were lots of...
It's a natural special effect.
It's a natural special effect, exactly.
Hmm.
It did look amazing.
Very good. Phil, what's your answer?
The set design in the abyss and the filming underwater. No idea how they managed it or how they coped.
There was lots of punching.
Lots of good handheld work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, John, your favorite special effect.
Okay, I'm going to go not with the Abyss, but the very end of Quadrophenia. On the cliffs, they didn't have drone shots back then. I assume that must have been a long helicopter shot of him riding along the cliff. And I was very impressed.
I see the shadow of a helicopter in the shot, but I didn't notice
that.
Yeah,
I didn't see that either.
I didn't see the shadow. But good job for them.
Well, I'll.
Fun fact. Yeah. That cliff has probably fallen into the sea by now. That he was driving on.
Because he drove on it?
Because he like. Yeah.
No, because it's bits of it are falling into the sea like very frequently, and he was riding quite close to the edge.
I got quite nervous.
Yeah, I vomited.
So yeah, the cliffs are receding year by year.
Mm. Okay.
I'm glad it didn't recede with him on it. That would have been
me too. Me too.
All right. My favorite special effect was the obvious and iconic one, the water alien that with what's her face's face? The lady face. Mm-hmm. Lady face. Anyway. Super crazy awesome for its time, right? Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, John. John, what location would you like most like to visit?
Probably Brighton, like the day before all those events happened. Right.
Yeah, baby.
All right, Phil, what about you?
Alice Springs / the Australian outback generally.
So
gorgeous.
So I'm in the good old American Air Force, and there's a base out there, and I've never been to it, but I've had a couple friends who did, and you have to have a psyche valve before they will station you out there because of extreme isolation.
Mm.
Wow. Alice Springs?
Alice Springs, yep.
It is in the middle of the country, and there's nothing else around it. All of Australia is on the coast.
Cooper Pedy's quite close to it.
All right, that's one of the places close to it.
That would be – I would like to – that seems like a fun place to visit. It must have a crazy energy, a crazy protective energy about it, you know? Mm. I'll visit Alice Springs one day.
Let's go tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. So, Mickey, did you say already your favorite location?
I did not, but I'm torn between Brighton and the Outback. In so many ways, but also two very similar places, you know.
Yeah. One's a bit warmer than the other.
Yeah.
Both have undersea aliens.
Both, yeah, exactly.
Well, I chose the Abyss. And I don't know why anymore, but there it is. It's on my notes.
You mean the alien city in the Abyss?
It's really shiny.
It's pretty shiny. Pretty. I think more than the alien city, just plummeting into the Abyss, aside from, you know, my whole body collapsing in on itself, I think just the piece of complete isolation, like no kids or stupid wife telling me what to do.
That's good.
Yeah, just the quiet of the ocean. Anyway, all right.
That's why Ed Harris went down there to get away from the wife, and then they vomited him back up.
Now the divorce will finally take.
Your favorite song, John.
I think it's silly of The Who to put You Really Got Me by The Kinks in their own movie. because I don't know if there's a Who song that measures quite up to You Really Got Me. That's my opinion.
Okay. What do you think, Phil?
I agree with John. I love You Really Got Me, but I also enjoyed The Real Me in Quadrophenia.
Mm. And Mickey?
I've also gone for Quadrophenia, and I absolutely love the song Love Rain Over Me.
That's a good one.
The one at the very end.
Which is the one at the end. Mm. Just love it. It's so evoking.
It is good.
Yeah, I actually, of all the songs, I did write that one down. I'm like, oh, this is a cool song. Yeah.
So there's a diegetic song in Walkabout. Just kind of one of those quiet moments where they're wandering around and they all just break into harmony and sing All Out of Love by Air Supply together. So, but I didn't choose that. I chose Bellboy, which is the name of a song.
Yay. Nice.
Bellboy!
All right, Mickey, who's your favorite guest star in these movies?
Well, I've got two. I was quite excited to see Ken Jenkins with his little cameo at the beginning. So Bob Kelso from Scrubs.
Oh, yeah, Kelso, yeah.
Oh, Kelso, yeah, okay.
But, you know, obviously Sting.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
You say obviously.
Phil, what do you think?
I enjoyed seeing Roland Schitt from Schitt's Creek as a young man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
On the platform.
Yeah. All right, John, what do you got?
All right, cool. They picked two of mine, so I'm going to pick the third. Actually, but really quick, before I do, I found it interesting that Sting, I think he made news by posting on his Instagram him singing the song Russians, you know, like kind of this song that it's kind of a silly song. It's like this really silly. But I kind of like how he was just kind of like, I can't believe I'm singing this song now. Like, I never thought I'd sing this song again. And yeah, singing Russians. Okay, but I picked Timothy Spall. He's a projectionist.
Yes.
Crazy. The theater. Yeah, and he's, you know, he plays, what's his name? Peter Pettigrew in Harry Potter. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he does. Okay. So
a bunch of other stuff.
The character I chose has always wanted a submarine, and he ordered one as a child, and he was told it would come in 600 to 800 weeks. He finally got it. His name is Chris Elliott, and he's in The Abyss.
Yeah, that's funny. Hmm. Chris Elliott. Like, how did he get that part?
I have no idea. Okay, all right. External recurring character, and there's a couple. There's a ton, actually. John, what do you got?
I didn't do a lot of research. I just went impulse, and I'm like, okay, it's got to be Michael Biehn.
Kyle Reese.
From Terminator and Aliens and stuff. Kyle Reese, yeah.
All right, Phil, what do you got?
I went for the concept of action movie as the ultimate marriage counselor.
Very good.
Like in Die Hard, you go through an action movie together, and all of a sudden your rocky marriage is back on. The same thing happens for Thingy and Thingy here.
But how long does that last?
How long does it last? I don't know.
So if it only lasts for 2 months, they have to find another abyss.
I think the same problems will surface, won't they?
It's so true. Thank you for that brutal realism.
You're welcome.
All right, Mickey, what do you got?
I went for Michael Biehn too, because he's just so pretty and lovely. And
mustache-y.
Apart from the mustache.
He's great.
Okay. Well, Kimberly Scott is in The Abyss, and she was also Aretha Franklin's mother in Respect, which we saw last year.
Wow, pulling deep. Nice.
Yeah, there you go. Internal recurring character, and I'm going to go with bathing. Lots of bathing. Mickey, what do you got?
I went for beautiful scenery.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
And Philip?
So water. There's lots of water in the abyss. There is a lack of water in the outback, and there's a massive fight in water in Quatrefina.
I love beach fights. They're the best. All right, John, what do you got?
Okay, this is different than bathing and water in general, but I have objects falling into bodies of water.
Okay. All right, John, what's your favorite death or the best death?
Okay.
If you say the boy from Walkabout is your favorite death.
Honorable mention to Black Boy from Walkabout. Honorable mention to Michael Biehn for getting crushed in his little runner thing. And his eyes popping out really wide. Hmm. But my favorite death is Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, who died, but who was yelled back to life by Ed Harris.
Yes.
She yells at her so loud that she comes back to life.
So I, cause I watched that, and like after 1 minute of CPR, they're like, she's dead, jerk, you know, but apparently you're supposed to do CPR for about 20 minutes before you stop.
Yeah. Katie and I had a big conversation about this, and kind of blew my mind, because I always think it's really funny in movies when they're like, you know, when someone's doing CPR for too long and then people are like dragging them off, like, stop it. You're going to CPR them too much. You're going to kill them more than you are. You know, like, I never really understood that. That's just a movie thing, right?
Yeah.
I could have a long conversation about movie CPR scenes, including this one. We can do that.
Defibrillators. Like. It's your pet hate.
We don't have to do it now.
Is it, well, I mean, just, I mean, you can sum up, Mickey. I'd be curious to hear. Is it just like something that's annoying, you know, as someone in the medical profession? It's just like, you know,
there's
why are people like this?
So many inaccuracies about resuscitating dead people. This will come up a little bit later. this was a reasonably realistic scene in that she properly looked dead, which made a nice change, because there are plenty of scenes where they're resuscitating someone with like really red lips, which, you know, suggests that they've got really good blood flow going to their lips. So, you know, big kudos to them to make her look dead. And right.
Well, a lot of people have just really good makeup. Just like,
yes,
like this will work. That should be in the lipstick commercials. Like, he'll look good even after you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there were I had quite a few issues with the resuscitation.
Defibrillators is a big bug there. So, they don't start your heart again.
No, exactly. Defibrillators are only for electrical activity that you see that's shockable. But also, defibrillators don't work if you're really cold. You can do a few shocks to start with, but generally, if you're really cold, it's unlikely to make any difference. So you generally just have to do CPR for a long period of time until you get warmed up. And there was no mention of her temperature.
The more you know.
There you go.
But, I mean, if we had to assume she was extremely cold.
Exactly.
Well, her heart was cold, the way she treated her husband and everything.
But also, normally movie and TV recovery scenes, especially if you've drowned, is that you suddenly start coughing and then sit up and everything's fine, which, you know, is just not the case ever in that situation. The only time you might be okay is if you have a shockable rhythm. So if you have a heart attack and then get shocked really quickly, then you might regain consciousness. But yeah, there's never a time where it's all happy and you're sitting up and chatting.
She's basically saying CPR doesn't work. It's all a conspiracy.
When you do wake up from CPR, though, is your first thought, why am I naked?
Yes. Oh. Yes. And where am I? Who am I?
Okay. So then your favorite death was Lindsay then. Is that what you're saying, Mickey?
No, no. My favorite death was the very dramatic death of Sting's scooter.
Oh, very good.
I enjoyed the crewman getting a bulkhead to the face.
Ah, very good. Well, I chose Lindsay, so it was so brave of her to drown herself for 5 solid minutes when they could have been like swimming. But anyway, I'm just going to start off the villain of these films is drugs. It's drugs, kids. So. Mickey, your favorite villain.
Nice. I mean, it's got to be coffee/his-moustache-and-torn-t-shirt combo.
Yeah. Okay. Michael Bean's face furniture, also my choice.
All right, John, what's your villain?
I pick coffee, Michael Bean. I thought one of you would probably pick his mustache alone, so thanks for not letting me down.
So predictable.
All right, John, well, what's your hero?
Okay, so there's a section of The Abyss where Ed Harris and that one guy, Cat, his name is Cat, right? They swim underwater to the underwater hatch, and then they're like, oh, crap, Michael Bean is over in the moon pool, you know, where they dip the machinery. Mm-hmm. And Cat is like, I can't make it, man. It's like, okay, don't worry, I'll go over there. And then so Ed Harris swims under to the moon pool, and then he sees Michael Bean, and he has a huge fight with Michael Bean, and Michael Bean's just about to kill him. And then someone taps him on the shoulder, and what do you know? It's Cat. He made the swim after all, and he saved the day by punching Michael Bean in the face.
And he pays off that line about the hammer from earlier.
He'd been sitting there for 5 minutes watching, though.
Yeah. He's like, this will be really cool when I do this, yeah. Wait, which line about the hammer?
Remember when the Navy SEALs first turn up, he's all like, oh, I've beaten up guys like that before.
I could have
they
been
used to
that
call
guy.
My right hand the hammer.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
He does one of those guys like he said he could.
Okay, no, thanks for catching. Yeah, that's cool. I do like these kind of movies where it's just like, yeah, just throwaway dialogue can come back. That's fun.
All right. Well, let's see. Who still needs to say their hero?
my hero was Monkey, a.k.a. Toya Wilcox.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, very good. Because
in comparison to Steph, she just seems like really cool and chill and very loyal. She's there in the fights. She's always just having a good time. She seems to genuinely care about Jimmy.
Yeah,
she's a heavy enabler.
She's a heavy enabler. But she, yeah, all right, all right. That's me told.
Right. No. She's a cool chick.
So everyone in that movie was an enabler.
My hero was The Wedding Ring.
Oh, that's mine too.
So nearly got discarded.
Oh, that's a great hero. I like that.
His life / fingers.
Because his wedding ring was supposed to be made out of something. Was it titanium or something?
Adamantium.
Adamantium. But I remember after this movie, like because of this movie, people were like, the best wedding ring in the world is made out of this metal because, you know, nothing can, it's the hardest metal in the world or whatever. But it was because of this movie. So anyway. All right, fine. Wedding ring. Oh, okay, Mickey, back to you. The movie goof that you thought was just the greatest.
I think it was the, actually, I didn't really wait. Oh, yes, there was that. Yes, there was some, I didn't really think it was the greatest, but it was there. They, in Walkabout, they definitely lived in Sydney. They set off from Sydney. We got a nice view of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And then somewhere she says, "Where's Adelaide?" And it, you know,
being thousands of miles
like
away.
Literally half the country away. So we're not quite sure what was going on there.
Drove them a long way for that picnic.
I
should have recognized shots of Sydney.
Yeah, she didn't even know if she was in Australia
they
anymore.
For months.
Yeah.
That's true. So yeah, sorry, not the best, but
worthy.
Worthy of a mention.
All right, Phil, what have you got?
I like the incredibly fake looking foam pipe that Ed Harris wields in his fight with Coffee. As soon as he lifts it up, it looks like a sort of giant screw. As soon as he wields it, you just know that it's made out of foam. And I swear, when he hits him with it, you can see it bounce off and almost go boy, oi, 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 oi. And then it gets dropped. And I swear, just for a split second, you can see it float in the water.
Like one of those realistic cakes made out of a big screw.
So, John, what's yours?
Okay, I don't know if this really counts, but... and this is something I didn't realize when I was watching The Abyss, but I read in the materials later. But The Abyss takes place in 1994, apparently, which is kind of what makes it a science fiction movie. So it's like 5 years in the future from when it was made.
He loves but to do I that. Do,
yeah.
He did that in Terminator 2 as well.
Terminator 2 was like just a few years, like 3 or 4 or 5 years in the future from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway... The Abyss takes place in 1994, and I guess what James Cameron didn't know is that we wouldn't be using video Skype for all communications in 1994, because we do. Like, because in the movie The Abyss, there's just a lot of video phoning going on, and also a lot of emphasis on like Soviet subs when it was 1994. It was just the time.
That was just around the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was going to be update very soon.
All right. So my movie goof has been mentioned so many times in our conversation, but it's just the fact that when they decided that Lindsay was going to drown, that they just waited for her to drown as opposed to just her taking a real deep breath and swimming as far as she can before drowning. So anyway. All right. Funniest moment. And fear that someone else is going to take it from Quadrophenia.
Okay.
When the man is ankle deep in the ocean and he body surfs straight into the sand.
You don't have the right. You're hosting this podcast. You don't have the right to like go first.
Sorry. John, what's yours?
Fat old guy face planted on Brighton Beach. But my runner up, The Abyss, and the guy who wakes up from a coma. He just kind of – they're all talking. They're all just talking about something. And then he says, oh, don't worry about it. You know, the angel says everything is going to be okay. And then Ed Harris kind of does a double take at him. And he's like, let's just talk about that later. And then they move on with the conversation. But, you know, it's like he's talking about the alien who came and visited him. Because mm-hmm. that's what he saw that put him in the coma. And Ed Harris just couldn't deal with it. He's like, I don't even know what to say right now. That was pretty funny.
All right.
I thought it was also amusing as an add-on to that when he saw the alien, he went, "Bud, is that you?" Like this really yeah. bright, shining, beautiful alien approaching him.
Yeah, easily confused with Ed Harris. Yeah.
Bud, he looks great.
So, Phil, what do you think? Funniest moment?
Oh, I can't really say it, unfortunately. It's when... when Jimmy is very, very angry, one of the many times Jimmy's very, very angry in Quadrophenia, and he's getting on his scooter and he's trying to kickstart it, and it's taking a few goes to start it, and he just repeatedly shouts, "You're all C words, you're all W words," just again and again on top of his voice. And in a way, it's very tragic because he's clearly having some kind of mental break.
Yeah,
but it's also... Yeah. Hysterically funny in the literal sense of the word hysterically funny. I just cracked up.
Very good.
It's the apotheosis of the cursing in that film that builds up to this kind of glorious moment.
Yeah, it was glorious.
Was that when he hated the plants out front of the yard?
No, I think that was a different time. Yeah.
Okay.
He did hate those plants.
He hated those plants.
All right, Mickey, what's your favorite funny moment?
The moment where realizing that the postal van has run over his scooter, he shouts, "You've killed me, scooter! Killed me, scooter!"
Oh, man. All right, well, on the other side of the coin, what is your favorite what on earth or what the heck moment?
Definitely the waiting for Lindsay to drown, then setting off to resuscitate her.
Sting's dancing.
John, what about you?
Okay, well, we've talked about it so much, but, you know, the Aboriginal boy death at the end of Walkabout, like, which I still don't quite get. I was like, what? But I'm actually going to go with In the Abyss, where they're having just some meeting and Coffee is being all crazy and he's talking crazy stuff. But then it pans under the table and he's just slicing his arm. Like, he's got like 20 cuts in his arm. He's just sitting there under the table, just cutting his arm practically off.
I made a note that moment was much like many of my current adolescent patients, sadly.
Oh, no.
Very emo.
Yeah, it's like... Are we sure the audience is getting it? This guy's a bit messed up. What more could we do? Should we sort of hack his arm up? For no
He's releasing the tension.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with, from Walkabout, close to John Cena, I went with the dance, and I don't know what we decided the dance was all about, but the thing with it was during the dance, I was like, I had to stop and go, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And I'm torn between trying to verify and not wanting to verify.
So. I'm totally going to do that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, John, your favorite quote.
Quotes. Here it is.
I should have gone first, but go ahead.
The two honorable mentions. I know I do this all the time, but I just have to make sure they're mentioned. The part where he's talking to Kev and Kev says, "Mods, rockers, they're all the same." And then he says, "But that's why I'm a mod. I want to be different." Also in Quadrophenia, when he's talking to Steph and she goes out with some other guy, it's like the first time she goes out with another guy, not the disastrous one, but the first time. And she says to him, "You jealous?" And he goes, "Nah." And then she says, "Pity. I thought you was." And so I like that line a lot. But then my favorite line is in The Abyss when Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio says, "Coffee sees Russians, he sees hate and fear, but you have to see with better eyes than that." Mm-hmm. I like that line.
Nice. Ooh, yeah, nice. Good.
Phil, what do you think?
Honorable mention to raise your hand if you think that was a Russian water tentacle. but I just, for the randomness of it, when the fight erupts in Quadrophenia in the cafe where they all hang out and the proprietor is chucking them out. The blameless proprietor, who they seem to get on with otherwise, is chucking them out. They just, I can't remember who it was now, but someone just feels the need to lash out and say to him, your rolls have all got scabs on them, and your tomato sauce is all watered down.
Oh,
nice. Man.
Sick burn.
Very good. Mickey?
Similar to Phil's funniest scene, which can't be repeated except to say... You're all W's and C's. W's and C's.
Oh, my God.
I just love it.
Oh,
I'm going to try and get my parents to watch this at Christmas.
Okay, so my favorite quote is from Walkabout, and it's the girl, and she's trying to communicate to the boy, and she says, "Water, drink. We want water to drink. You must understand. Anyone can understand that. We want to drink. I can't make it simpler. Water to drink."
White privilege, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite scene, Mickey.
Oh, I found this quite hard, which is sad because they are three really good movies. I've gone with the recess scene, which I know is a bit strange because I've also said how much I hate it, but I sort of it's at least reasonably real. You get that feeling that she is actually dead, which I like. And she didn't do the absolute classic coughing and sitting up. She at least stayed asleep for a bit afterwards and seemed to be genuinely unwell afterwards. Mm. So, yeah, I liked the realism. They didn't do CPR fast enough for me, but apart from that, you know.
Where were the aliens when she was drowning? That's what I want to know.
Mm. Yeah, indeed.
Okay, all right, Phil, your favorite scene.
Well, I can't go with that because in that scene, Ed Harris says, "Breathe, damn it, breathe," which is an unforgivable cinema sin. So they were, "Don't you die on me."
I know.
Not on my watch. Not on my watch.
Which Ed Harris later says in Apollo 13, "Not on my watch."
Yeah.
So I like the end of, it's kind of two scenes, the end of Quadrophenia, I like when he puts on the eyeliner, so he's like experimenting with a new identity that's different and a different kind of suit, and he's on the train and he's just sort of looks like he's getting his confidence back.
He's just completely off his face.
Oh no, I think he's reached the point where he's got to try something else.
Maybe he started goth.
The person found him and he looked at them really strangely?
No, I thought it was joyous. That's
almost gurning. I loved it.
And then he decides to, and at the very end, I like it when he's riding on the thing.
It's a really nice scene.
He decides to throw his past off the cliff and not his future. How's that?
Yeah, he throws Sting's past off.
Sting's
the cliff.
Past. Yeah.
Sting's present.
All right, John, what's your favorite scene?
Okay, I actually kind of mentioned it already, but in The Abyss, when it's after they go to the submarine and everything, but then the hurricane up top happens and it drops the crane into the ocean. The crane lands on them, and then the crane pulls off and falls, and they see the tether, like, straightening out, and they're like, oh crap. Just that weird bit of tension where they're like, okay, this big giant building is about to pull us into the abyss. Mm. I love that.
Yeah. So
the relief when they don't get crushed.
And then it turns into worse. Yeah.
So my favorite scene is, and I don't know why, so I'm not going to belabor the point, but it's when the mods are beating up Kev and Jimmy sees that it's Kev, right? And Kev says, "Jimmy," and Jimmy just runs away. Like a tower of mashed potatoes, it means something. So. All right, John, who's your favorite actor?
Okay, I'm going to have to agree with the boys in Coupling. You guys ever watch that show Coupling? It's the Stephen Moffat show, right?
No. Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, you've never seen it? There are times when they just talk over and over again about how great Jenny Agutter is. So I'm going to go with Jenny Agutter playing the girl in Walkabout.
Oh, great.
If nothing else, she's very brave.
Mm. I've also gone Walkabout, but I've gone for Luke Roeg, the director's son, who plays the white boy. I just think it's extraordinary what they got out of him as a really young kid in that kind of difficult location shoot in an improvised script. And it just seems like lightning in a bottle kind of fluke that he was that good. I'm just kind of in awe of that performance somehow.
Yeah. He was his generation's Ricky Schroeder.
I don't know what that means.
That doesn't mean
anything. You don't want to know. Okay. He was in Silver Spoons. It was this terrible show that was always playing in at Roy's house when I was growing up. They hated too.
We hated it too. We hate watched it. Okay. All right. Mickey, yeah. Who's your favorite actor?
I have gone with either Phil Daniels, Jimmy, or M.E.M. I thought she did a great performance.
You should go with M.E.M. and then I'll take Phil Daniels.
Phil's. Okay. M.E.M. It was a really nice, smooth, good characterization.
Very good. Yeah, so I picked Phil Daniels, and I didn't. And certainly, you're welcome to say Phil Daniels. But Phil Daniels is Jimmy. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was so hot back in the 80s. I wonder what happened to her. Mm. I mean, when I say hot, I mean not only is she very attractive, but she was like hot stuff acting wise. She was like the big it girl acting wise way back then.
Mm. Well, that can be your unanswered question then, John. John,
whatever happened?
Does anyone have any unanswered questions? John, do you have any?
I have a couple left over. First of all, whatever happened to Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio? second, they're on the rig, the oil rig, right? But where did Coffee get that room full of like cameras and microphones to every single room in the rig that he was like a visitor of?
It's true.
Let's see. We talked a little bit about the death of Black Boy. I don't understand that. Where did Jimmy get all the keys for every Vespa in the country?
I wondered that. Did 1970s Vespas just have a skeleton key?
Something. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he just had a bunch. Maybe it's just I don't know. I guess if you just if he's
it's,
been in
it's like the Force. Scene. If you're a true mod, you can just touch a Vespa and it springs to life.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe back when he was friends with his friends, mates with his mates, like they all copied each other's Vespa keys, and there were only like 20 total. So if everybody gets a Vespa. And you get everybody's key, then you could take anyone's Vespa that you come across. Maybe that's what they do.
So, John, the answer to your question about Mary Elizabeth is she's still acting. So if you watch The Punisher on Netflix, she's in that. She's also in Grimm.
Yes.
A lot of Law and Order. Grimm. It seems like a lot of these 90s actors end up on Law and Order.
Law and Order?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know... I don't know if I watched any Punisher. So
she basically went to television shows after Robin Hood.
Yeah, it's like crazy. She was in Robin Hood. That's funny. Okay, I have one more quick question though, and that is Quadrophenia based on an actual date where there was a rocker mod clash on Brighton in 1965? Was that an actual literal historical event?
Yes, there were seafront clashes.
Really? Okay.
Definitely. Across the South East Coast, there were seafront clashes between the two. And Brighton was one of the places where they had it.
Can I just say how crazy that sounds? That people who like different music like got into violent fights on that scale? That just sounds crazy. I can't think
of the equivalent. I'm looking at Wikipedia now. It says... modern rockers fighting in 1964 sparked a moral panic about British youth as the two groups became widely perceived as violent and unruly troublemakers.
Was that Mary
BBC News stories from May 1964 state that modern rockers were jailed after riots in seaside resort towns in southern England, such as Margate, Brighton, and Clacton.
Wow.
Weird. Yeah. That is weird. And I still think it's strange that, I mean, Vespas, I don't know what it is over there, but like I don't think you can be taken seriously as a gang in the United States riding a Vespa.
Except on Scrubs.
No, the Rockers have got them on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else? Unanswered questions? I have none. Mine have been answered.
I have two quickies.
Yeah.
We know that Jenny Agutter got together with Blaine and lived her domestic life. But I want to know what happened to her brother. How did his experience affect
him? He turned back around into the Outback. And,
okay.
Lives there today.
Went walkabout.
Yeah.
I agree, because she was in the same flat
yeah.
that her mother presumably it was her
and
mother.
And what happened to her mother?
Yeah, who was making the dinner. So if her mother's not there and she's in her parents' flat, then it must be quite some time later. So he probably would have been...
Yeah. He couldn't stand Blaine and moved out.
So, yeah, so he probably went back. He kind of became sort of an outback man. Like a crocodile hunter. In the meantime, but the girl, she actually killed her mother and took over the flat.
So I was going to say that her father had like put the kids in the car, buckled their seatbelts, said, I'll be right back, killed mom. And then when the girl finally makes it back home, mom's in a closet.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yes, I think you'd be right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It seems strange that he left her behind.
Yeah.
And my other one, and this actually I think is a bit of a hanging plot point, unless I missed it. But you know, Jimmy's uncle hooks him up with the gangster dealers, who they then destroy the car of.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my goodness, his uncle's going to be in big trouble, or they're going to be in big trouble. Has he got his uncle's legs broken or something?
It wasn't his uncle, though.
He said he was his uncle.
Pete's uncle.
Yeah. But whatever. Yes. That person.
Yeah.
I thought for sure they were going to come back to that and he was going to get done over by the hoodlums.
Yeah.
Probably did.
Yeah.
Probably did.
He's dead. Anyway. Mickey, you
everybody's dead. That's the answer to the unanswered questions, is they're all dead.
Two of my questions were answered. One was, why go for a weekend away to Brighton and not plan any accommodation? I wondered what they were thinking. Like, you know,
there's so many guest houses.
Mm. There's like cheap B&Bs. Like, no one planned accommodation.
They spent every last quid on Blues, I think.
Blues.
So as long as they had to have enough Blues for the trip, yeah.
Yeah, probably that. But it did strike me as a bit weird. Like, they knew where they were going to go for brekkie, but no plans for where they were going to stay the night on a bank holiday weekend. So that's like three
nights as
well.
Bank holiday weekend. They left it to the last minute. Everything was booked
up.
Yes,
that might be it.
I have another really dumb question. I don't know why I didn't think of this one, but I don't know what Blues are. Like, what are Blues?
I don't know.
No, me neither.
Okay, I can tell you because I love Blues. They're a downer, right? And there's actually a name for
them. They said downer. Did they say the word downer in it?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. It's like something.
Benzos, maybe?
Benzos. They're the same thing as benzos, yeah.
Ah, okay.
What's a benzo?
I'm not a doctor.
Benzedrine, right? I don't know.
Like diazepam, lorazepam, nitrazepam, midazolam. They're all benzos. So they're sort of, sedating drugs.
Yeah. Well, if I had to prescribe anything to Jimmy, I think I would sedate him.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what he needs.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we got a couple of special Mickey awards because this is her podcast. So, John, who is the most Mickey character?
I don't know. I was going to go with Lindsay, but I think I'm going to actually go with Virgil because he revives Lindsay.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I'm going to go Virgil there.
Okay. What about you, Phil?
Well, I know what the correct answer is, so I can't say. Mickey's going to say, and I agree with what Mickey says.
Oh, well, okay. So
she would know.
Since we're thousands of miles apart, I'm going to go ahead and say monkey and hope that that's not offensive. So there you go. But Mickey, who do you think? Who is the character?
Is the correct answer.
That was the correct answer?
Yes, monkey.
Yay!
Monkey
we went for. Because I, as a teenager, I was quite naughty. I did, follow the bad crowd. In fact, I was probably second in command of the bad crowd. And I spent a lot of my teenage years, loving people who didn't share that emotion. Unrequited love. Much like Monkey.
That's important. Yeah. Those are important.
So
teenage.
As John was a teenager. Yeah. He did a good job of unrequiting love to other people.
That's a kind of you to say, I suppose.
Yeah. All right. So, okay, very good. Well, the scene, the most Mickey scene. What do you think, Phil?
Well, again, I know. So I'll let her say.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm letting you down on this one. But
okay, well, hold on. John,
fraught with possible relationship problems if I say anything else, so I just have to go with what she says.
John, what
That's
do you
fair.
Say?
Oh, okay, well, I mean, look, Mickey, we all know what you were like when you were young, so I'm going to have to definitely go with the Brighton Brawl, just the whole Rumble scene.
Nice.
Also, I'm going to go ahead and go with hanging out at the Billabong, drinking the mud water and such. But,
you're very close.
What's the correct answer?
The correct answer is when Jenny says, "We don't want people to think we're a couple of tramps," and the boy says, "What people?" Which just about sums up mine and Phil's life.
She could be in the middle of the desert with nobody around for hundreds of miles and be worrying about what other people would think and cursing herself for not putting her good underwear on or whatever.
Yes.
When they find her body.
Correct.
She's going to be wearing her granny pants.
Nice.
All right, John.
Yeah.
John, from your in-depth knowledge of Mickey now, what is the most Mickey movie? And Mickey, you don't get to answer this question.
But okay, fine.
Go ahead, John.
The most Mickey movie... it has to be Walkabout, I think.
So can I say I had The Abyss until she admitted that watching it 30 years later, she now hates it? And so I'm also going to say The Walkabout.
The Abyss drags on for too long. Okay. It has long, boring sections.
So, Phil, what's your answer?
The Abyss.
The Abyss?
The Abyss. Oh, you're going with The Abyss.
When I think of Mickey, I think of The Abyss.
Nice.
Thanks, darling.
All right. It's time to
get
real.
For the record, The Abyss is awesome, and I'm sad I never saw it before.
Yeah, and for the record,
I
still love it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Okay, we're going to start with you, Mickey. What's your third favorite movie? What's the third most Mickey movie?
I would say... probably Walkabout, which is interesting, isn't it?
That is interesting.
Yeah. If I had to choose everything between all of them. Sorry. Yeah.
My third favorite movie is The Abyss, but
no.
Someone's got to be third. There's only three, and I did enjoy it, but it was not up there with the other two, and it wasn't particularly close in my opinion.
Mm. Okay, John, what do you got?
I think I'm gonna go. It was really good and thoughtful, but I'm gonna go Walkabout, I think, as well.
I have no idea. Okay, so my number three is Quadrophenia, but during the course of our discussion, it's been number one and number two as well.
Yeah.
And I keep shuffling. So number three, Quadrophenia. My number two is The Abyss.
Wow.
Coming back around to you, John.
All right, my number two is Quadrophenia.
And Phil?
My number two is Quadrophenia.
Oh, boy. Okay, Mickey, what is your number two and your number one?
I think my number two is... Oh, it's so tricky.
She's wobbling.
I'm wobbling. I think my number two is The Abyss. The Abyss.
And so you're not.
Okay,
and so the most Mickey movie then is.
It's Quadrophenia.
Quadrophenia.
Wow.
Yeah, we were all
foul mouthed.
And
I
have to say, I mean, obviously, we haven't really addressed the big elephant in the Quadrophenia room, which is the over racism and homophobia. So I don't want you guys to think that.
That was her favorite bits.
It's too late.
By voting Quadrophenia,
racial epithets.
That,
judgments have been made.
That I'm not acknowledging that is there. And
different
it certainly did make me uncomfortable watching it in the future. I mean, in the current.
Yeah.
But that aside, if I'm thinking of that as different times, yeah, Quadrophenia.
Well, I don't want to excuse any of the behavior or anything, but I certainly don't think these people are portrayed as, you know, right or saintly.
It's lampooning them a bit at times, yeah, isn't it, when they say those things.
I think it's just like, here's, it's exposing many of, you know, it's like, okay, they're exuberant, but besides that, here are many of their other faults. So, and I think that's what the movie was doing.
Yeah. Well, so we'll just come back, and I probably did this backwards, but we might as well hit everyone's number one in case people can't figure it out by doing math. But Phil, what's your number one?
It's Walkabout. I was really blown away. I'd never seen it before, and I thought it was going to be kind of a bit arty and a bit wordy, but probably quite good. But I was really, really wrapped up in it. I really got into it, and the landscapes are amazing. And I don't know, it's just got a weird little X factor that I wasn't expecting that was just charming to me.
John, that's if I'm nice. Doing my math right, your number one is...
My number one James is Cameron. The Abyss.
The Abyss.
And it's funny because I watched all of these with Katie, and Katie's like, so which one do you think is going to be number one? I'm like, I don't know. They're really good. I think I might go with The Abyss, you know, because we just finished watching The Abyss, and I was like still kind of pumped from watching it. And she kind of – I can't remember what she said, but she kind of said something like, yeah, you're – that's how very basic of you.
And you would choose that.
Expected, how very expected and basic of you, which may be why I was so defensive about, like, doesn't anybody like this movie? Because, yeah, of course, I mean, when it comes down to it, and I kind of said it before, look, I love artistic things, but I think at my nature, the stuff that James Cameron does, that I kind of, the feelings I remember from, you know, being excited from like crazy stuff happening to people and like the editing of it all, you know, and the sound and the effects. It's like, yeah, it took me back to that. And I just had never seen The Abyss until now. And so I kind of felt taken back to like that era. So I think that's why I liked it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If you're in the mood for a film like The Abyss hits the spot, if you know what I mean.
So let's talk real quick about these movies' ratings. It's crazy because you can't get closer. The Walkabout on Rotten Tomatoes is 84, Quadrophenia 82, The Abyss 83. Like really close, right? The Abyss is the only one that I have all financial details for. It cost $70 million, which was a lot for its time. It only made $90 million. So not a huge profit. Ooh. Making movie. I do know that Quadrophenia made $243 at the theater. I don't know how that's possible. Like the crew went to movie theater and watched it together and that was it. I don't know.
Wow.
So anyway, that's that. And Mickey, that was a lot of fun. Thank you. I hadn't seen a single one of those movies, obviously, and it was those were great watches.
Oh, thank you.
And now
I really enjoyed them.
Now, Mickey, your dreams are about to come true because you have to come back next week and we're doing Jane Austen films.
And yes.
The masses have chosen Clueless, which I've never seen, but Clueless is an adaptation of Emma.
You've seen Clueless?
I've not seen Clueless. Don't tell me what I haven't seen.
I swear, you and I and Wyatt watched it.
I've never watched Clueless.
All right, fine.
Yeah, well, okay. All right, so I get to pick a movie here. And I need to make certain that we watch a classic adaptation. So I'm choosing the Sally Hawkins version of Persuasion.
Nice.
And John, you're going to have to get your free 7-day trial to BritBox to watch it, and I'll do the same.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh cool.
There's no other way for us to watch it. So.
I've been thinking about getting BritBox for a while because a couple months ago I'm like, I have to watch all of Red Dwarf.
Yes, good choice.
I couldn't do another BritBox, so okay. In the next 7 days, I'm going to watch all of Red Dwarf on top of these movies. I guess.
So I've never seen this version. I'm a big fan of the earlier version with I don't know how you say the guy's name, Ciarán Hinds.
Kieran,
sure. That guy, I love that version. Love it to death. This is a slightly more recent version, and John is in love with Sally Hawkins. So here we go. So
she's interesting. Yeah.
All right.
Sally Hawkins.
And John, now you get to give us a treat.
Mansfield Park.
Okay, you're talking about the one with what's the actress's name?
I don't know. Billy Piper?
There's only one Mansfield Park film version I'm aware of. I'm sure there's been more, but
it's the one. I feel like it's from about 15 Frances years O'Connor? Ago. And it has the woman, Frances O'Connor.
Yeah, from 1999.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think I own it.
I almost picked a movie called Love and Friendship. That's supposed to be really good from about 5 years ago. But it's like based on a Jane Austen short story, I think. So I don't know how well that would have fit in, but I kind of wanted something from 1999. So let's go Mansfield Park.
All right. So that's that. Those are our, I was kind of really hoping to watch, Austen Land. I think that looks really cute. I don't know anything about it.
But. I think you'd love it. I saw it.
Okay. Well, I've only seen one of these. I've only seen Mansfield Park. So there we go. I think it's pretty good. And I know, Mickey, you've at least seen the Sally Hawkins Persuasion.
I have, yes.
Okay. Have you guys seen Clueless?
Nope.
I have, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have a good time. And so there you go.
My expectations could not be lower. So the only one is up.
Okay. No,
there's no bonus in Clueless.
Yeah. it'll be good to have a nice skeptic on the podcast with us. So after that, after we excuse you from your community service, Andy Wilson is going to be joining us. There will not be a poll from – no, there will be a poll. I'm sorry. Even before you hear this podcast, you're going to see the poll because we're podcasting in a week. So our timeline is compressed. So poll's coming out probably within an hour if I'm being honest. Andy Wilson is going to end up watching three movies he's never seen before. And then for his community service, that's where we get to do some choosing.
He's providing this crazy charity to the rest of the world because he's not choosing his own movies. Yeah.
So he's letting the Facebook fans pick one, and then you and I have to compromise on one, and he's picking another. But his categories are movies that made a ton of money that he's never seen, movies that were huge box office bombs that he's never seen, and movies that are like art house or like fancy artsy movies that he's never seen, but people say are important to see. Anyway, you'll see the poll soon enough. And then
you know what? The poll is out right now. It's out as we're talking. So I mean, it's not out right now, but if you're listening to this right now, then it's out.
Oh, sure.
So I feel like we may as well ask Phil and Mickey, like which one they would choose.
You want to hear the movies?
Yeah.
Okay, so Titanic, yeah. Dr. Zhivago, yes. The Exorcist, Ben-Hur, The Sting, Sunset Boulevard. I can't believe Andy's never seen Sunset Boulevard or The Exorcist. Rules of the Game,
yeah.
Which I want everyone to negative votes for Rules of the Game, please. Lawrence of Arabia, All About Eve, which is a fantastic movie, City Lights, Ishtar, Waterworld, to continue the water theme, John Carter, which I really don't want to watch, Pluto Nash and Speed Racer.
Wow, I've not seen many of those.
There's some really bad movies on this list.
The Exorcist is a favorite of mine. I'd be interested in people's take on that.
Mm. Yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, I think it's funny because like Roy and Andy and I, we're all very similar religious backgrounds, but The Exorcist is one of those things where it's just like, okay, what do you think of this crazy thing that we don't talk about in Sunday school? Yeah.
So I've seen The Exorcist. It's been about maybe 30 years. It's been a really long time. And I probably had a holier-than-thou view of The Exorcist at the time, so it wouldn't be the end of the world for me to watch it again.
Dr. Zhivago is very good.
I've never seen it. All I know about it is it's very, very long.
Yeah.
And a bit depressing.
Okay.
Like the Abyss, then.
Like the Abyss. So anyway, we'll end up watching one of these. In the meantime, Andy's going to have to do some community service, too. Everyone gets to be a part of that, including Mickey's going to get to be a part of that. So one of the categories that was randomly chosen is movies that are split into two parts. Now, we're not talking like Rocky 1, Rocky 2. We're talking Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows parts 1 and 2. Right? Mm. Movies that are for real, it's like it should be one movie, but it got split into two.
Okay, so we're watching Harry Potter, Hunger Games, and Twilight then.
Breaking Dawn.
And,
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Well, so The Hobbit was broken into three movies, so it has to be a two-parter. So, but okay. Dune, the new Dune movie, probably not going to get released in time.
But. Yeah, it's not, the new Dune isn't going to be released, but yeah, the new Dune, the Dune Part One would count. Yeah.
So I found
you could do it.
I found that's true. It's kind of a they made two movies out of that, right? So that's fascinating because
the two-parter. The first one was really good, and the second one was really bad.
Oh, I haven't seen the second one. So I know the book is split this time between like the past and the future, and does the movie?
Yeah, same deal. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So there's actually a Wikipedia article about movies that have been split into two parts, and there's about a dozen of them. There's not many, but we're probably going to end up watching Twilight or The Hunger Games. If that gets chosen, no one has to choose that.
Does The Godfather count?
No. No.
Because it's based on a book.
But it's a trilogy.
Yeah.
Trilogies automatically discount.
Well, and we already watched one of the
Godfathers. And then we have to make a decision. If this wins, is this now a six-movie podcast? Where we're watching the movie split into two parts? I kind of think it is, which I know John hates. It's a lot of work.
I hate movies.
Yeah, John hates movies.
Too many movies.
Too many movies. All right, Mickey, you get to give us a category. And we talked briefly about Australian horror movies based on taking a wrong turn, but it turns out there is a series of six Australian movies called The Wrong Turn. So anyway, but Mickey, what have you got?
I thought sci-fi, or if there weren't enough, any movie that was set in the future that is either now or the recent now.
Now, you're going to love this. We did a podcast.
A film.
A couple years ago.
Dang it.
That was movies set in the future that is contemporaneous or the past.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Dang. Okay.
Movies about insects.
Why not? How about Australian movies?
Okay, yeah.
This might be too hard. That feature, it might be too hard, animals.
Oh, I don't think that'll be hard at all.
That should be too hard.
I think there's
plenty. Is there an animal in Muriel's Wedding? I bet there is.
I'm sure we could find one.
You could broaden it out to Southern Hemisphere, maybe, if you're struggling.
Yeah.
I like Australia, if we can.
Well, no, so, I mean, we're just going to watch The Kangaroo Jack. I don't know. Wait, so, you know what? We'll put it in
how
the poll.
How about Rabbit Proof Fence?
What?
Rabbit Proof Fence.
Is that in Australia?
Is that a movie?
Yeah, that's a very good Australian movie.
Well, there you go. So this
I've heard the title. No, it's Australian. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Is that too?
No way. We're going for
Australian
it.
Animal movies. We can do that.
Australasian creature features.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pacific animals. We could do Pacific animals.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that gets huge. I'm sticking with Australian. Well, I don't know. It's your category. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
I think we can do Australian. I think we can do Australian.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My pick is 90s high school movies. So.
Very good.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, fertile ground.
Yeah, so things like
Clueless.
Yes.
Clueless.
Spoilers.
No, let's see, like another She's All That, or what's the one with Hewitt? Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Mean Girls.
Can't Hardly Wait.
Can't Hardly Wait, yeah.
Yeah.
Ten Things I Hate About
Ten
You.
Ten Things I Hate About You.
You was in there.
Yeah.
Mean Girls, I think Mean Girls tipped the centennial clock there. I think it just went past the 2000s. Mm. I Know What You Did Last Summer. That counts.
Yeah.
Election, was that in the 90s?
Yeah, Election, 1999, yeah.
How about... that counts. Served, You've Been Served, or whatever that movie is.
You Got Served.
You Got Served, or Drumline.
I think those were 2000s. I couldn't be sure. Loser, I think, is one. I know that's... With
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, original movie.
The original Buffy.
Oh, that'd be so excellent, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, anyway, them's the categories. So a couple polls coming up. Again, sorry. By the time you're listening to this, you'll have seen the new movies. You'll have seen the polls because we're in a hurry. We got to start watching some movies here. But yeah. When John posts this podcast, I won't bother the page for a small cushion of time so it can glow and you can all enjoy it.
By the way, I know we're wrapping up here, but I really got to see this Billy Piper Mansfield Park now that I found it. I think Billy Piper looks great in like an old in period attire.
Was I right about that? I wasn't sure if it was actually Mansfield Park that it was.
Yeah,
she was in.
Billy Piper is in Mansfield Park. I found it. Good. You know, in a TV movie that we can't watch. We're watching the other Mansfield Park. Don't worry. I'm just saying.
That's the 2007 one.
Yep.
We're watching the 1999 one.
Correct. We're watching the 1999 one. Billy Piper's in the 2007 one, and we're not watching that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I want to say to Phil and Mickey, it's been such a pleasure. Mickey, I'm so glad that we finally got you on.
Likewise.
And hopefully not the last time. When you guys come back on, we'll subject you to the same new rule. You'll have to choose three movies you've never seen before. And it'll be fun. And, of course, we're going to see you in Utah in July because you're coming out. Committed.
And we hope it's been a fun evening. I know it's been really late for you, but we hope it's been.
Oh, it's been lovely. Thank
it's
you.
Been
yeah.
Great fun.
Always a pleasure.
Good. Good.
All right.
Okay. Well, start watching Jane Austen movies because we're going to meet together again in like a week.
Yay!
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this podcast. Again, if this is the first time you've listened, we've got like 100 of these, and we have a great time. So check them out, and I'll catch you again next week. And John, thank you. Phil, Mickey, thank you. And see you at the movies.
Thank you.
That was terrible.
Thank you all.
That was a terrible time.
Bye.
Nice work.
The episode where it's Mr. Renham's funeral, and he has the video, and at the end of the video, it's just him eating an apple for like 3 or 4 minutes. Anyway, I did that to a friend. I sent my friend a happy birthday video, and the last 3 minutes is just me eating an apple.
I did not. I haven't gone to the party yet.
Okay, well, pretend to be surprised, John. Jen told me she's going to play the whole thing. So,
good.
Perhaps you should get on Cameo, JR. There might be an audience for that. I'll eat an apple for 3 minutes for you.
I love staring
directly into the camera.
Far out. Yeah, you know. Okay, by the way, backstory. This is my friend Zoe who lives here, and Roy lives far away, but Roy is friends with Zoe. But everyone who's going to this party does not know Roy. And so, it's going to be – you're going to make quite an impression on all these strangers.
So you're not going to
actually
remember.
Do the thing.
Let's kill this file and start over.
No. Just keep recording. That's fine.
Okay. So the outtakes is going to be 10 minutes of us trying to figure out a gammy microphone.
How much control do you think I have of the editing here? I can do lots of things.
Oh, I was about to say, you're about to reveal to me that you have none.